Log Talk Radio.
And called it puppy love.
Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out?
My dog's better than your dog. My dog's better than yours.
Bring on the generation.
I'm telling you, we're going to have to muzzle this guy. Good evening, and welcome to Erie House, oldie, tiny radio. How nice of me to open up the chat like 5 seconds before showtime. Sorry about that, gang. Obviously the show is going to the dogs, and I'm one of them, Dale Kay from Spook Show, accompanied by...
Sitting here with my Scooby Snaps, I'm Dave Binkley from Weird, This Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One, and I'm here with Rin Tin Gun. I mean, who are you, sir? Please sign in.
Which way did they go?
It is I, got to go, blah, blah, to you all. It's not the coffee.
I don't believe that for a second.
Easy, boy. Easy, boy. We don't want to take to you to have to get you fixed. Anyway.
Is he broken?
I know. I could never understand that about dogs. Why is it that they take something that functions absolutely perfectly, they make it not work, and they call it fixing something? I'm sure the dog doesn't feel that way.
I probably don't.
And if you don't know quite what I mean, there's a great episode of Married with Children where he was being forced to have Buck, the family dog, neutered. And he has this, like, dream sequence. And there's a guy in a Buck suit talking to him about not being happy about his pending operation. But I digress. We got great movies? No. Radio shows.
We got movies.
About good dogs.
Good dog.
That's right.
Good dog. How about you like our doggy?
Yep, I'm celebrating my new puppy. And let me tell you, me and Mrs. K are suffering some severe puppy fatigue.
Puppies have a lot of energy.
Like human babies, they're hilarious when they conk out. And then you're just like, oh, catch my breath, do housework. And then, of course,
not unlike human children.
Not typically, a lot different.
You tie them down, but yeah. You can tie down a human child. Yeah.
True. Duct tape.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Duct tape, any spare wall space you can find, sure, yeah, it's great.
Yeah. See, they invented Gorilla Glue a little too late for my kids. You know, that would have been helpful.
Oh, yeah.
At least with kids, you don't normally need a pooper scooper.
No. Well,
not usually.
It depends on what you do. Understanding what you put in comes out, you know. It's just...
Yes. Never give your dog hot sauce.
Never. Well...
Yeah, chili.
Bad thing. No, we would never do that because dogs are good. Aren't all dogs good? Don't all dogs go to heaven? That's what I thought.
That's what they say. That's what they always say. They cross that rainbow bridge. And they go to heaven.
Yeah, I don't really understand that. There's this weird conception thing about that, and it's like, wait, they go to this rainbow heaven. Well. As an Asgardian, you know, a thunder god myself, I'm going to, you know, meet all my animals there. But what about the people that are not Asgardian? You know, they're never going to meet their animals because they're all over there in Asgard or somewhere over the Rainbow Bridge and all that.
Perhaps they'll be with Ozzy Osbourne selecting pineapples. Who knows?
I know what you mean, though, because they're in Buffalo. One of the bridges to cross over to Canada, to the Canadian side.
It's called the Rainbow
Falls. It's called the Rainbow Bridge, and I was
expecting to be
swarmed by a bunch of dogs. It just they weren't there.
Oh, I know. Yeah, they're all there. Yeah, that would be. Yeah.
Well, maybe.
Here we go.
if you're not a great animal owner, when you get to the Rainbow Bridge and nobody's there, that kind of tells you something, right? But my wife,
you've led a poor life.
I'll tell you what, if such a thing exists, when my wife's turn comes, the bridge is going to collapse. She loves and cares for every living thing, even insects. I'm not kidding you.
Yep.
We hatched a bunch of praying mantises.
Mantises. Yes, it's a good thing your wife loves deadly mantises.
Yes, they're all going to be about 100 feet long and coming to a neighborhood near you.
If your wife's enjoying deadly mantises, your time on the planet might be limited. Okay.
Yes.
Just saying. You know,
cover your head every night, Dale. Cover your head every night.
Covering my head.
That might be a plot, you know.
Could be. But who would come to my rescue is a dog. And we got dog stories. We got two, count them, two of Lassie. Rinty, good old Rinty, Rin-Tin-Tin. And Challenge of the Yukon with...
And Yukon Jack of the Cornelius or something. I don't know.
Yes.
Yukon King.
Okay.
I was doing a funny on Rudolph the Red-Nosed Snake Deer or whatever
he is. Well, his dog was bigger and it was white and somewhere along the line it lost its teeth. I don't know. To the kid that
wanted and it bounced. It bounced.
Bumbles.
The bones.
Yes. Back to the dogs, please. As we one thing before we get into, I thought we'd start with these two Lassie tales. Okay. Let us clear the air about Timmy in the well. It never happened.
Now, don't be doing that because
it never.
One of my morals involves that.
Okay. Don't do it, Dale. Don't go there.
Don't do it.
I'm going to crush your...
No.
I've done the research. Timmy never fell in the well.
I've got a moral about that. Don't kill it. Don't kill it yet. Kill it after we're done.
I will. I'm glad you warned me. Speaking of
Lassie on radio.
Oh, here we go.
It was kind of a promo for his MGM films, which were very successful. He was portrayed on radio by Pal, the male dog that played Lassie in the early films about the canine characters. Now trainer Rudd Weatherwax cued him to whine and bark and pant at appropriate times. Additional sounds for Lassie and other dogs were provided by Earl Keen, an animal imitator. Weatherwax also narrated the program, and they had John Duffy was the organist, and Lassie actually never portrayed Lassie in these shows. Lassie always portrayed other dogs. Some of them were real life dog, rescue dog, that kind of thing, and others were just made up dogs. But it was just I don't think he was too convincing that night he played a Chihuahua, but other than that, it was pretty good.
Yep. Did you just say one of the people that trained him's last name was Rubber Quack?
Weatherwax.
I did not. Weatherwax.
Weatherwax?
Wax. Weatherwax.
Wax.
Yeah, W-E-A-T-H-E-R-W-A-X.
Uh-huh.
That was last
name. I'm thinking that's a made-up name.
We got a lot of radio. Four shows, count them, four.
Four.
Perhaps we should start one now.
Yes, please. Please start one now.
Dave, where shall we begin?
Well, you said you want to start at Lassie, so let's start at Lassie.
His master's eyes.
There you go.
Fair enough. This one is from?
Yay.
November the 5th, 1949. Woof, woof.
Lassie, the world's most famous dog, and Walmart, America's favorite dog food, team up for The Lassie Show. Yes, from Hollywood, it's The Lassie Show, transcribed by John Morrell and Company, makers of three-flavor Red Heart. And here is Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer's lovable motion picture star, Lassie, in person. Lassie is fed Red Heart exclusively, and Lassie's vigorous bark, strong body, and fine glossy coat are positive proof that Red Heart helps keep dogs healthy and happy. Lassie speaks for Red Heart. All three wonderful flavors. And now to introduce our story, here is Lassie's owner and trainer, Rud Weatherwax.
Thank you, Charlie, and hello, everyone. Well, today Lassie plays a part of a German shepherd dog named Checkle in a true story entitled His Master's Eye. And to help us tell this true story, Lassie has a very special guest, Don Amici.
Thank you, Rud. I'm honored at this opportunity to impersonate Mr. John L. Sinekin, who, through the inspiration of his dog, Checkle, conceived the idea which has resulted in the institution known today as the Master Eye Foundation, a nonprofit organization which furnishes guide dogs without cost to the blind all over America. Our story begins shortly after World War I.
Dad was sure right about these German shepherds. Don't you just love Checo, Ma?
Yes, Marvin, I do, dear. Look, there's a big strange dog in with the cattle.
Hey, it's Checo, boy. Go get him. Get him, boy. Come on, Ma.
Marvin, what do we do? What if that huge dog will kill Checo?
Quick, Ma. Quick. Help me find the store. Checo? Mom, did you see that? He made that big mutt run. Oh, I told you, Checo.
Marvin, something's wrong with Checo. His paw. It's going to be torn from his leg. Oh, quick, run back and get the wheelbarrow. We'll have to get him to the house and call the doctor. Hurry, Marvin, hurry.
What are you chuckling at, John?
Oh, just watching old Checo out there in the yard playing with Marvin. Gets around pretty spry on those three paws. Poor old cripple.
I know I watched him. More coffee, dear?
No, thanks. Say, you know, Genevieve, since the war, so much has been done in the way of making artificial limbs and feet. I wonder why someone hasn't tried to make the same helps for injured animals.
Oh, John, it just couldn't be done. The dog wouldn't wear it.
You've always said Checo could be trained to do almost anything. Why couldn't he be made to use an artificial foot? That is, if we had one.
Well, don't you think he'd chew the straps and try to get it off?
He might. But if it did work, my, he'd attract a lot of attention at the dog show with an artificial limb. Well, you know, it might save a lot of other good dogs from being destroyed because of those same kind of injuries.
Stumbling over someone.
Oh, I'm sorry. Can I help? No, quiet, Checo.
Is that a dog you have there?
Yes, I got special permission to keep him with me on the train. You see, he's sort of handicapped, too. He wears an artificial paw.
An artificial paw, did you say?
Yes, and he lost one front foot in a fight. I had this artificial one made, and it worked out so well, I'm taking him to the dog show along with two Springer Spaniels I'm showing. I hope to demonstrate how well a dog can get along on an artificial limb.
Oh, that's wonderful. May I pet him?
Oh, sure, he'd love it. Come on, Checo. Then I'll stand, boy.
Hello there, old fella.
He's a German shepherd. Quite a few of them coming into the country now.
Oh, I know. I saw a good many of them in Germany before I lost my... before I was wounded.
Oh, you lost your eyes in the war?
Yes. You were going down the aisle with your dog?
Yeah, just take him down for a drink.
Well, may I walk him to the end of the card just for fun?
Why, of course. Here, here's the leash. Checo, let's go. Go ahead. No, no, don't be quiet now. I'll just go ahead and he'll follow.
Oh, good dog. Here's the leash, and thanks a million. You know, it's a funny thing. I just followed the dog, and I didn't bump into one seat. Guess the dog knew where I was going better than I did myself.
Yes, I noticed he did, didn't he? Just straight down the aisle. You know, I'm getting an idea. And if it works out, I... Oh, it's got to work out.
I'm glad you're home, John.
Sure, good to be home, honey.
Oh, dear, how did you do at the show? Did you win anything? Where's Checo? Did he fall out with you?
Wait, just a minute, honey. You tell me, how are things around here?
Everything's fine, dear.
Good.
We missed you, though.
Oh, well, I'm glad. How is Marvin? Oh, here he comes. Well, how is my big boy?
Oh, huh? Put me down, Pop.
Well, how's Checo, Pop? Did you show him at the show?
I sure did, son. I'll tell you all about it later. Right now, I want you to get him out of the truck. Also, take Alvin, Bright Boy, out of the crates and put him back in the kennels with the other dogs. And see that they're all fed and watered. Will you do that first?
Oh, sure, Pop.
Okay. Come on, dear. I just can't wait to tell you.
All right, then.
Let's sit on the back steps.
All right.
Oh, hello, Checo. Good boy.
Sounds like Checo's glad to be home, too. Well, come on, sit down, John, and tell me all about it. What did you win?
Well, Alva LaSalle got the third ribbon in the open class, and Bright Boy got the fourth ribbon in the field trials.
Well, gosh, I don't think that's much to get excited
about. Oh, no, of course it isn't, honey. That's not what I'm excited about. Oh. I'm excited about a great new idea, and it was Checo that gave it to me.
An idea? Checo gave
it? Yeah, listen, please, dear. We were on the train. I started to get out of the seat to get Checo a drink, and in so doing, I bumped into a blind man. We visited, you know, he lost his eyes in the war. He loved dogs, and he kind of made a fuss over Checo. And then he asked if he could take the leash and lead him the length of the car. And the miracle was that Checo led him. He didn't bump into one single seat.
Well, I don't get it. What possible
connection? Well, don't you see, dear? Here I've been raising Springer Spaniels, teaching them to hunt, teaching them to retrieve, showing a few and selling a few. For what? Don't you see what it would mean if I could train dogs to lead the blind?
Train dogs to lead the blind? Oh, why, John, what do you expect of a dog? Why, that's the most impossible idea.
Oh, no, it is not, Genevieve. I tell you, I've got it all figured out. All I got to do is work out a training technique that'll make a dog understand that he is the leader instead of the one being led. And I know how to do that, too. I'm going to blindfold Marvin, and then I'll lay out an obstacle course. I'll use Checo to work out the technique. I'm sure German Shepherds are the dogs for this job. Oh, I know it'll work. It's just got to work.
I thought you were working with the dog. What are you sitting here for?
Oh, I don't know. Sometimes I think I'm getting nowhere.
But last night you were quite enthusiastic.
Yeah. Yeah, he'll turn aside at the barricades, but those mud puddles, he just walks right straight through them. Logs in the ground, he jumps over them. Blind man would fall on his face a dozen times if he tried to follow Checo through this obstacle course.
But you said last night he'd hold anybody to the course.
Oh, sure he will. But like I said, when he comes to a barricade, he walks around it nicely. Then when he comes to a mud puddle, he'll walk you right straight through it. That's a part of the training technique I just can't seem to work out. Oh, honey, if you could have seen Checo on that train, walking so carefully down the aisle. The train was swaying, too, but he seemed to know. He seemed to realize that a blind man held his leash. And then he had to walk exactly in the center of that aisle. I don't know, maybe I expect 2 months. 4 months now I've worked. Nighttime, daytime.
John, look. Checo. Standing at the first barrier of your obstacle course. He wants to try again. He likes your game of blind man's buff. Oh, Marvin, put on the blindfold. Your father's going to try it again.
Okay.
Do go on, John. Checo's asking you to try it again. Don't give up, dear.
Genevieve! Genevieve, come here quick, will you?
John, what's wrong?
Nothing's wrong. Checo just led Marvin blindfolded the full length of the obstacle course without one fault.
What?
Come on, watch. They're just about to come back through the course.
Right.
I tell you, I found the secret of making a dog understand that he is the leader instead of the one being led. I want you to see this.
Oh, John, how wonderful.
Now, watch him. Okay, Marvin, come ahead. Now, watch him. What? There, you see that?
Yes.
See, he took Marvin right around that barricade without a bit of trouble.
Uh-huh.
It's the big mud puddle ahead that's always worried me. But not anymore.
Oh!
Did you see that? What did I tell you? Look, you see him, Pa? See him hold back? Genevieve, I've got it. A guide dog for the blind is possible. Okay, Marvin, take off the blindfold and come here.
Well, how'd we do,
Dad? Oh, wonderful. Just wonderful, son. Son, you didn't peek under that blindfold, did you?
Oh, no. Honestly, Dad, I couldn't see a thing. It was Checo.
Oh, Checo, you wonderful old dog. Peg leg in the hole. You know, if this training technique works with other dogs like yourself, all I know is that the credit will be all yours. Checo, you will have been the first tiny flame which will grow until it can light the way for those who walk in darkness.
Thank you, Lassie, Don Amici, Betty Arnold, Jeffrey Silver, Don Diamond, and Earl Keane. Now, friends, in just a moment, Rudd Weatherwax will be back to tell you about next week's story. But first, John Morrell and Company, makers of three-flavor Red Heart dog food, want to turn over their usual commercial time in order that Don Amici may bring you this important message. Don Amici.
Friends, the Master Eye Foundation is a worthy cause that deserves the support of all. It provides Master Eye guide dogs free to the blind, regardless of race or creed. Master Eye is a non-profit, non-sectarian foundation directed by Bishop Bernard J. Scheele of Chicago. It costs the foundation over $1,500 to raise and train a Master Eye guide dog. Thousands of blind people need Master Eye dogs. Now, you dog owners can appreciate what a Master Eye dog can mean to a blind person. And you can help the blind to own one by sending a donation to Master Eye Foundation, Minneapolis 2, Minnesota. Do your share to light the way for those who walk in darkness. Send that donation today to Master Eye, Minneapolis 2, Minnesota.
Now, once again, Lassie's owner and trainer, Rudd Weatherwax.
Next week, Lassie plays a part of a movie dog in a story entitled, I Learned Him. Now, don't miss it.
Lassie is presented each week at this same time by John Morrell and Company, makers of three-flavor Red Heart, the taste-tested food that your dog will enjoy, the health-tested food that will keep him in shape. Lassie is fed Red Heart exclusively. And Lassie's vigorous bark, strong body, and fine glossy coat are positive proof that Red Heart helps keep dogs healthy and happy. Lassie speaks for Red Heart. All three wonderful flavors. Lassie appeared by arrangement with Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, who invites you to see their production of Battleground, starring Van Johnson, John Hodiak, Ricardo Montalban, and George Murphy. The Lassie Show is produced and transcribed in Hollywood by Frank Barron. Directed by Harry Stewart, story by Hobart Donovan. This is Charles Lyon.
Bye,
hear that happy hillbilly Judy Canova tonight on NBC.
There we go. Good evening. Erie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
Sometimes Timmy is down the well just because he needs some quiet time.
I can understand that. Hey, you know what?
Yeah.
I looked up three flavors of the Red Heart dog food. And the three flavors are beef, liver, and cat. Those are the three flavors.
There's beef, liver, and cat.
And cat, yes.
Yes.
Hey, but on a serious note, that service for the blind dog out of Minnesota, the very first radio reading service came to us out of Minnesota as well. So they must have a lot of blind people up there or something. I'm not sure, but the very first radio reading service for the blind is out of Minneapolis.
Concern for assistance for the blind just was prevalent in that area for whatever reason. I think it's a wonderful thing. I think it's good for the dog, too. I think shepherds and other working-type dogs have a sense of wanting to have a job, you know, of wanting to do something.
And they don't always make it. I know that one of my volunteers, he actually also trains lead dogs for the blind. And the last one he trained didn't make it. He couldn't do all the stuff of the blind. He couldn't separate being a dog from being a lead dog, you know. And he ended up with a dog, his beautiful dog, Opal, black lab. And it's now his best friend. So so it's a rigorous training. And then they have to go through tests before they get approved to be given out. And this dog was not able to pass the test.
Well, he didn't make the cut, but I bet you he makes a great pet all the same.
Kind of like Kim Kardashian not being able to pass the log jam, you know?
One could say there are other reasons, but let's not go there. There are other, perhaps, similarities, but that's just an opinion. And mine, like noses, everybody has one, and they're usually full of unpleasant things.
Yeah, I made mention that I myself had dogs. In the past 20 years, I've had two dogs for 20 years, and both of them were males and both had problems with wanting to take the lead. And it's a dominance thing, and you have to train it out of them.
Yes.
You put them on a lead.
At some point, the dog is always going to try to be the alpha, and it's like, yeah, no, that's my job, sorry.
Exactly, and you have to establish yourself that way, or they just walk all over you.
They will do it.
They say they want treats. You give them treats. They want to go out for a walk. You take them out for a walk. Tell me how they're not in charge.
Yeah.
If you don't take them out on a walk, you're going to be cleaning up inside your home. So
yes,
I don't know if that's necessarily.
I would say that cats are more in charge than dogs. Because dogs
and the cat will eat you when you die. Yes, that too.
Dogs have jobs. Cats do not have jobs. Unless you have a bona fide mouser, cat doesn't have a job.
Back when I had cats, we had three cats at one time. We would take all three of them on a leaded on a leash walk. They would all go on a walk.
Oh, no kidding! That's amazing.
No kidding. Yeah.
There you go.
They have jobs, too.
We got more radio for
you.
We're probably going to run over to Rin Tin Tin time. AD?
Yeah! Woohoo! Whoopee!
Little Rin Tin Tin. Between 1930 and 55, Rin Tin Tin was cast in three different radio series, beginning April 5th, 1930, with Wonder Dog, in which the original Rin Tin Tin performed some of the sound effects until his death in 32. Most dog noises were performed live on the radio by a dang name. Guess this one. Figure this one. Bob Barker did the dog noises.
Come on down. Woof, woof.
You know, it makes sense.
The 15-minute program was broadcast Saturdays on the Blue Network of NBC at 8:15 p.m. to March 31st when it moved to Thursdays. Then it changed from 1930, September 1930, changed from Wonder Dog to Rin Tin Tin. And Don Ameche was part of that, too. Don Ameche and Junior McLean starred in the series, which ended June 8th, 1933. Then the last, then went October 5th, 33 to 34. Then the last one was on Mutual, January 2nd, 55 to December 25th, 1955, as a 30-minute program. And that's what we got here tonight, a 30-minute program.
And we got all 30 minutes for you. Let's get to part one. It's called The Ambassador, and we have a start date.
Or November 13th, 1955.
The National Biscuit Company presents The Adventures of Ren 10-10.
Yo, ready!
Ren 10-10, Ren 10-10, Renny, Renny, Ren 10-10, Ren 10-10 is brought to you by shredded wheat and milk foam too. Renny and Rusty side by side, loyal, heroic, the regiment's pride. Action, drama, you'll find them in the thrilling adventures of Ren 10-10.
The National Biscuit Company presents this week's adventure of Ren 10-10.
Okay, Rennie, here I come.
Wow, you know, keeping up with Ren 10-10 is a real man-sized job. Now tell me, Rusty, just how do you do it?
Well, sir, every morning I have me a man-sized breakfast, Nabisco shredded wheat. And boy, is Nabisco shredded wheat ever fun to eat. It looks just like a raft in your milk.
Oh, you're so right. And believe me, those rafts of Nabisco shredded wheat are just loaded with energy. The energy you need to keep you on the go all day long. In fact, everybody needs the raft of energy in Nabisco shredded wheat.
Besides all that energy, Nabisco shredded wheat tastes so good. Crunchy and everything. So be like me. Every morning, sail a raft of Nabisco shredded wheat into your breakfast bowl.
Kids, just ask Mom to get you the package with Niagara Falls on the end. And then you're sure that you're eating the kind that Rusty eats. Nabisco, the original shredded wheat. And now, back to the adventures of Ren 10-10.
Lieutenant Rip Masters speaking, officer of the 101st Cavalry stationed at Fort Apache. We're known as the Fighting Blue Devils. As you all know, soldiers are called upon at a moment's notice to perform all sorts of duties, and at times, if necessary, even to risk their lives. So we're prepared for anything, always on the alert, night and day. I can give you a good example of what I'm talking about. Fort Apache had settled down for a good night's sleep when a special courier arrived. I was immediately summoned to Major Swanson's office. Except for the sentries, Sergeant O'Hara, and myself, the rest of the post was deep in slumber. But Rusty and Rennie were awake, although they weren't supposed to be.
Gee, Rennie, something's up all right. Rip went to the Major's quarters right after that courier arrived. Even Sergeant O'Hara got called to the Major's office. It all looks kind of hush-hush. I know something big is going on, but we probably won't know what it is till it's all over.
Rusty?
What is it, Biff?
Lieutenant Master sends his respects and requests that you fall out at the stables in full uniform in 5 minutes.
Gosh, what's it all about?
Search me, top secret.
Is the troop moving out?
Nope, just Major Swanson, Lieutenant Masters, and you.
Huh? Rip and the Major and me?
And Rennie. Now hop to it, soldier.
Gosh. Okay, I am hurrying. Sir, when do I find out where we're going?
When we get there, Rusty.
What are we going to do?
This is your first secret mission, Rusty. So remember this. The Army often gives orders without explaining them. And a soldier follows orders without questioning them.
Yes, sir.
There's the rendezvous point, sir.
San Juan de la Cruz.
Well, Corporal, now you know where.
The old mission. But I still don't know why.
We're meeting Lieutenant Sharp, Army Intelligence.
Oh, oh boy.
Thanks for coming, Major Swanson.
You know Lieutenant Masters and Honorary Corporal Rusty.
Of course. That's why I'm here. Hello, Rip.
Good to see you, Sharp.
Hello, Rusty.
Hello, sir. Lieutenant.
I told them all about you and Rennie in Washington.
Gosh, you hear that, Rennie?
Suppose you let us in on the secret now, Lieutenant.
Yes, sir. I'll make it brief. The United States is about to sign a treaty for aid to Mexico. Our ambassador is on his way to Mexico now to meet President Diaz. When this treaty is signed, it'll knock the props out from under Don Cortez and his phony revolution.
Then he won't have any more reasons to raid and steal.
Exactly, sir. So Don Cortez may try to stop the ambassador from getting through.
Well, why not send a decoy on the obvious route and send the ambassador another way?
I'm glad you're on our side, Lieutenant, because that's the plan. You see, over there...
Yes?
That's the decoy stagecoach, Rip. And you're the decoy ambassador.
Me? Well, I never thought I'd wind up in the diplomatic service. When do I leave?
As soon as we complete your disguise.
How much does Don Cortez know about the ambassador?
Only that he's traveling with his family, sir.
Oh. Thought I heard a girl's voice over there.
She is Miss Curtis, and a loyal Mexican. She volunteered to act as the wife. To complete the family picture, we need a boy and a dog.
Then can me and Rennie volunteer, sir?
Oh, just a minute. Before you volunteer, let me explain. Intelligence has to eliminate every risk. Our troops will escort the coach to the border. Then a Mexican guard will take it the rest of the way. As far as we figure, there's no real danger.
But something could go wrong, Lieutenant.
Yes, sir. There's always that chance.
Sir?
Rusty, you have to think of this for Rennie as well as yourself.
Sir, me and Rennie volunteer. We're sure right in style, all right, Rennie.
That we are, Rusty.
I hope it all works out well, Lieutenant.
Well, I must say you've convinced me of one thing, Miss Curtis.
What is that, Lieutenant?
When I decide to take marriage seriously, I'm certainly going to let the Army choose my wife.
I hope she will have as good reason to be your wife as I have to act the part.
Oh, yes, I hope so.
Hey, we're coming to a stop, Rip.
I guess we're almost to the border, Rusty.
We should be there by now.
We're at the border. Here's where I leave you. Good luck, Rip. Miss Curtis? Corporal, be a good soldier.
Yes, sir.
Masters, you move off as soon as I confer with the Mexican officer and his men.
Right, Sharp.
Take care of yourselves.
Capitan Fernando Gonzalez, your service, senor.
I'm Lieutenant Sharp, United States Army Intelligence.
My pleasure, senor.
Do you think you have enough men, Captain?
Enough to take care of your ambassador and his family.
All right, Captain. Carry on.
Drivers, get moving!
Well, they aren't as well trained as our soldiers, perhaps. But they're good men, Rusty.
Hey, Rip, we're slowing down. What's the matter?
I don't know. Miss Curtis, would you know of any reason for stopping here?
I have no idea, Lieutenant, really.
Well, we've stopped. I don't know what could be wrong.
The captain's coming over, Rip.
Yes.
Relax, my ambassador friend.
What's the trouble, Captain?
No trouble. You are sensible, senor ambassador. You are the prisoners of Don Cortez.
Huh?
Too bad. Your driver did not show more discretion.
Ready, ready!
Rusty, hold it! Stay
ready,
here.
Ready.
Hey,
now,
you die!
Rusty, be still.
I can't.
You have to, Rusty.
I have to go back to Rennie. Please, Rip.
There's nothing you can do for him now. Pull yourself together. Now, that's an order, soldier.
But Rennie!
Rennie took his chances back there, same as we did at the start of this mission.
He got himself shot, fighting for us.
That's why we have to make sure he didn't do it for nothing.
Well, what can we do now? We're prisoners.
The longer these bandits think they have the ambassador, the longer the ambassador has to reach Mexico City.
Yeah, I guess that's right, Rip.
We just have to stick to our job, Rusty. Isn't that right, Miss Curtis?
I believe that is the idea, Lieutenant Master. But Rennie is laying back there, dying, Rip.
Rennie was a great and good soldier, Rusty.
Yeah, but...
He did his duty as he saw it, like all fine soldiers must.
I know, Rip, but we didn't even try to help him.
In battle, you aren't always able to help, Rusty.
Yeah, I guess you're right, Rip, but I'm sure going to miss him.
I know, Rusty. I know.
He was my buddy.
You're forgetting one thing, Corporal.
What?
We have to help the ambassador reach Mexico City alive. That was our assignment, Rusty.
Yes, sir. We'll make it okay, Rip, won't we?
I hope so, Rusty. From now on, things are going to get tougher. In fact, very tough.
Yes, sir. We're prisoners, all right.
Well, now you know what Don Cortez is like.
Don Cortez? That man was not Don Cortez.
Wasn't Don Cortez?
How do you know, Miss Curtis?
Because Don Cortez is my brother.
The stagecoach rumbled on mile after mile. The three of us sat inside in silence. Miss Curtis's information had stunned both Rusty and myself. It appeared that we had played right into the hands of the bandit outlaw, Don Cortez. And it certainly seemed that Miss Curtis was an accomplice. I was so angry I could hardly contain myself. And yet I couldn't bring myself to speak to the attractive young woman on the seat opposite me. All of a sudden, I found words. So did Rusty.
But Miss Curtis, I just don't understand.
There's one thing I don't get, Miss Curtis, or Cortez.
Yes?
These men still act as if they think I'm the ambassador.
Is that not what they are supposed to think?
Not since you've undoubtedly told Don Cortez the ambassador took another route.
I have not talked to my brother in over a year. I want this treaty to go through. I volunteered for this job to make up for some of my brother's wrongs.
Then I hope you know what you've done.
I do not understand.
The minute Don Cortez sees you, he'll know I'm not the ambassador. In a way, it didn't really matter what motive Miss Curtis or Cortez had. She did manage to place us in an extremely dangerous position. But more importantly, she was endangering the life of an ambassador of the United States. For the moment Don Cortez discovered our ruse, he would spare no effort to hunt down and perhaps destroy the ambassador. I'll be back in a minute to tell you the rest of the story. Say, what's going on here?
Oh, that's King. He belongs to a friend of mine.
Well, it looks like King can do a lot of tricks, just like Rin Tin Tin can.
Sure can, because Billy trained him with milk bone dog biscuits, just like I trained Rennie.
Do you mean that every time King learns a trick, Billy gives him milk bone dog biscuit as a reward?
Yep. It was easy to train him that way. He obeys, too. He really likes milk bone.
But you know, Rusty, and you kids listening in, too, milk bone dog biscuits do more for your dog than just making training easier.
It's good for his health, too.
Right. Milk bone is packed with proteins, mineral, and vitamins, and has more energy per pound than beefsteak. You could feed your dog nothing else, and he'd thrive. So why don't all you kids listening do what Rusty and Billy do? Feed your dog Nabisco milk bone dog biscuits in the yellow and red box. It comes in three bone sizes, small, medium, or large. Your dog will love milk bone. And now, back to the adventures of Rin Tin Tin. Lieutenant Rip Masters again. There wasn't anything we could do except to believe Miss Curtis's story that she was trying to make up for her brother's wrongs. Her brother, the powerful outlaw bandit Don Cortez. All we could do was to wait and see. After all, we were captives. We didn't have to wait too long. After another hour of fast traveling, our stagecoach rolled into the stronghold of Don Cortez and came to a stop in a tiny square. We were ordered out of the coach.
At last, your ambassador, you shall meet Don Cortez.
1 minute. It's been a long trip. My wife is very tired. She needs rest.
Come, senor.
Really, this is highly improper.
She will have much time for rest, senor. Later.
I insist.
Senor, you see this knife? You still insist?
Lead the way.
You can be reasonably, senor.
Miss Curtis.
Yes?
That veil on your hat, quick. Cover your face with it.
All right.
Keep your face hidden. Don't talk. Ross! Open the door!
Go inside and down the steps, Senor Ambassador. Senor, see the gentleman and his two friends in chains?
No.
Senor Ambassador, I present to you, safely contained by chains, Don Cortez.
Don? What?
Enjoy your stay, Senor Ambassador.
Well, that guy was a bit funny.
I failed to see the humor in that.
Did you guys know that Rin Tin Tin was given the city, not given the city, he was given the key to the city in New York by a guy named Mayor Jimmy Walker?
Yeah,
no, Mike.
No, not related.
No, wrong Jimmy. Wrong, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Actually, the first Rin Tin Tin was a silent star. And, you know, and he had to be a silent star because he was French and he barked with a French accent. So he was born in Flers, France.
Wolf,
I am not French. Wolf.
I am not French, mom. Wolf, wolf. Rin Tin Tin, also in his first movie in 23, supposedly, the film was such a huge success. It's often been credited as saving Warner Brothers from bankruptcy. All this from a dog that said, I am no Prince Ma, woof, woof. Okay, so.
You get nothing but facts.
27 films. 27 films.
Yes.
Yep.
I'm looking here on eBay, and you can get a 1920s Rin Tin Tin photo portrait from Warner Brothers, and these are kind of rare. They're still out there. There's a whole bunch of Rin Tin Tin by Marx in the 1950s. Whole bunch of little plastic figures and all kinds of stuff.
Cool.
Yeah.
It really went really big.
Yeah, 1950s was king of merchandising for programs. Roy Rogers and Lone Ranger and you name it out there. That if it was on TV. They merchandised the heck out of it.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. And well, I'm finding stuff I never knew about. But I'm not a Rin Tin Tin collector, but if I was, I would be in awe of the amount of stuff that's on eBay. the Viewmaster. They've got Rin Tin Tin on the Viewmaster. All three of us know what a Viewmaster is, right? Yes.
Oh, yes. Good old Henry Fonda doing those Gaff Viewmaster commercials.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
GAF.
Yeah.
Because they never said Gaff. It was always GAF. I don't know what that
is. They were in 3D.
They were in 3D.
You knew you made it when they put you on a Viewmaster reel. Then you knew you were somebody.
Or the cover of a Dell comic book, because Rin Tin Tin had a Dell comic book, too. Woohoo!
That's another sign of making it to the top.
Rin Tin Tin mail order serial prize Wanda scope with original box, and it's a compass and a magnifying. It's all kinds of stuff. All from Rin Tin Tin. Who knew?
Thank you, Rin Tin Tin.
Yeah, and Rin Tin Tin, Matt, the namesake carries over into so many different generations. The original Rin Tin Tin passed in, 32, you said? Something like that? There is a continuing Rin Tin Tin going on to this day. And this is crazy. Rin Tin Tin has both a .com and a .net. There's a Rin Tin Tin. So that's crazy.
And the current Rin Tin Tin is Rin Tin Tin the 12th.
It went up that high. I didn't get
that
far.
Right now. Yep.
Oh,
there you go.
I got up to number 8. But yeah, that was wild.
Well, I had my socks off so I could count higher.
Oh, that was it.
Wow.
Wow, Wilbur.
Just don't try to count to 21. Just don't count to 21 as we move on to our second part of The Ambassador, starring the ever-loving, beautiful German Shepherd, Rin Tin Tin.
And Cortez, you're a prisoner too?
I have never been anything else here.
Don Maria. Oh, my brother. Oh, how can you ever forgive me?
Forgive you, Maria?
You, for listening to all those terrible lies about you.
It is Miguel Sanchez's favorite joke. The reputation he has earned for me.
But how? Why?
Oh, it is simple. I have always been known to Mexico as a patriot. My movement for land reform built a large following. More and more people joined me. Among them, Miguel Sanchez and his men.
Don.
Then, behind my back, using my name and the principles of my cause, Sanchez made his raids. I learned of his raids when people began to drop away from me, disillusioned in me.
Oh, Don.
Go on, sir.
When I challenged Sanchez, he made me a prisoner and continued his thieving in my name.
Oh, my brother, you have suffered so.
But, Maria, how did you get here?
I will let Lieutenant Masters explain.
These two men with you, do they speak English?
Oh, si, but they are loyal friends. Juan Hernandez and Arturo Vallejo. You may speak freely.
All right. Come closer, amigos. And so I set about explaining to Don Cortez our plans and what had happened to us. There was a part of the story I left out because I didn't know it. Rin Tin Tin had only been stunned by the bullet which hit him. And at that very moment, he was on our trail. But he was being very careful not to be seen. It was a good thing because a messenger on his way to Sanchez was traveling the same road. Rennie crouched in the brush until the rider was out of sight. Then he set out on the trail again. A short time later, that same messenger reined up in front of the dungeon where we were being held. And he handed a letter to Sanchez, who quickly opened it.
Ha! Ga! Open the door! We wish to see our prisoners. I have news for our guests. Amigos, I'm about to order your last meal.
This time you go too far, Sanchez. The United States government will not accept the murder of its ambassador lightly.
You are for liars, Don Cortez. Lieutenant, I have just learned the ambassador has already arrived in Mexico City.
Mission accomplished, Rusty.
Hear it.
Sanchez, that treaty provides arms for a Mexican army big enough to blast you out of business. You're finished.
Except that I too have tricks, senor. I shall see that your death is blamed on that terrible bandito, Don Cortez.
Oh, no.
Then I become a national hero, for I single-handed will capture and kill notorious Don Cortez. I hope I have not spoiled your appetite for the feast I'm sending you.
It's no use, Rusty. We'll never get out through that door.
One more try, Rip.
No use, Rusty. Got to think of something else.
It's ready.
Rusty, there are probably other dogs around here.
No, Rip. I know Rennie when I hear him.
Well, here comes our last meal.
There must be something we can do.
Has to be something. Lenny.
Rusty, get his key and release Don Cortez and his men.
Yes, sir.
Lieutenant, do you see
I think we can get out of here.
We are free, senor.
Come on. Wait a minute. Wait. I want to have a look around. We're in luck. They haven't unharnessed the coach. Don, do you know where they keep the horses?
Si.
These people who used to follow you. Can we round up enough of them to give Sanchez a fight?
Oh, si. If I have a chance to explain to them.
Good. Hernandez, Vallejo, you'll take care of Rusty and Miss Curtis. We'll hide them near the coach. Then, Don, you and I'll get the horses and head south. We'll make our escape obvious. Get them to chase us. As soon as the camp is clear, grab the coach, head north for the border. I'll meet you there. Everything clear? Now, we'll head for the horses. You head for the coach.
Come on, Miss Curtis. We're going to the coach.
All right.
Nobody's seen us yet. So far, so good.
Only Don and the lieutenant can just...
They'll get the horses all right. There goes Rip and Don. Come on, Miss Curtis, into the stagecoach. Juan and Arturo, you drive. Well, you ride in here, Rennie. Okay, Juan, let's go.
Ma, we have lost the Americano and Don Cortez.
Silencio!
They could not have gone this way, Pedro. It is better we go back. We can't still make terms while we have the woman and the boy. Amigos, we are right.
From our hiding place in the rocks just above them, Don Cortez and I watched Sanchez and his bandits head back for town. Then the two of us rode on to gather Don Cortez's friends so we could fight the outlaws. While we were doing this, Sanchez and his men arrived back at their hideaway to discover that Rusty and Miss Curtis had made off in the stagecoach.
They had taken the stagecoach. They had to head for the border. And they would have to take the road. We can cut through the mountains. Where are the enemy?
Oh, don't worry, man. We must be pretty close to the border now.
Where the money are, amigo? We can tap them from here. We will wait till the time is right and then attack. The stage is it coming, amigos. Are you ready? Amigos, it's Don Cortez and the Spanish with man. Attack them! I will get the woman in front. That will stop them. Boy, get out of the coach.
Okay, Rusty.
Hey, Rip, look!
The banditos are running. Without a leader, they're nothing.
Oh, Lieutenant, how can I thank you?
Well, you better thank Rin Tin Tin, Miss Cortez.
Wow, I guess the mission's really accomplished this
time. Yes, Rusty, it is.
On behalf of the Republic of Mexico, it is my great honor to have been selected by El Presidente Diaz to come to Fort Apache to present my country's highest honor for bravery. To three gallant Americanos, I bring these medals. Lieutenant Ripley Masters.
Thank you.
Corporal Rusty B. Company.
Thank you, Don. I mean, sir.
See, it is good. Private renting thing. The lieutenant, the boy I could handle. But will somebody show me how I can pin this medal on the dog?
Now, let's listen as Rusty rehearses Rennie for his adventures.
Pretend me you're wrestling with a bad Indian, Rennie. Good boy. Now you're supposed to warn the fort of an attack. Okay, Rennie, you've earned your milk bone.
Ah, so that's your training secret, Rusty. Milk bone.
It sure helps, Mr. Morrow. Rennie learns tricks faster when milk bone's the reward.
Is that the only time he has it?
Oh, no. Well, Rennie gets milk bone for breakfast sometimes, and for snacks, too. But how do you suppose he keeps that nice silky coat and strong teeth?
Good point, Rusty. You see, Milk-Bone is packed with proteins, mineral, and vitamins, and more energy per pound than prime beefsteak. So, for easier training, for minor meals or snacks, give your dog what Rennie eats, Milk-Bone. Right, Rennie. Milk-Bone dog biscuits come small, medium, and large in just the right size to suit your dog. Just look for the red and yellow box that says Milk-Bone.
We couldn't help feeling a little proud, all of us. It was good to serve your country well. Know you'd done a good job. And it was some time before we could get Rusty to stop wearing his medal all the time, even on his pajamas. But Sergeant O'Hara finally kidded him out of it. Naturally, Sergeant O'Hara knew that a soldier wasn't supposed to wear his medals all the time. And that's why he kidded Rusty out of wearing the medal. Still, I think Biff O'Hara had another reason.
But how come we gotta go all the way to Mesa Grande, O'Hara, to pick the new Army uniforms?
'Cause Ordnance shipped them by rail, and there's no train to Salt River.
Will we get there in time to hear the big speech?
Maybe.
What's the big speech all about?
Oh, just politics.
What are politics all about?
Who knows? You ain't gonna wear that medal in town, are you?
Huh? Why not?
You just don't do it in the Army, Rusty, that's all.
Oh. Well, what'll I do with it?
Well, I'll take care of it for you.
Okay, here it is.
Now, that's being a good soldier.
Hey, you're pinning it on yourself.
Well, that's the best place for me to keep it for you.
Oh, you're just trying to wear my medal.
Well, sure, I'm just wearing it. Why, Rusty, I'm not doing anything of the kind.
Give me back my medal.
Oh, all right, here's your medal.
Don't forget next Sunday at this same time over this station, another exciting chapter in The Adventures of Rin Tin Tin, presented by the National Biscuit Company, makers of Milk-Bone Dog Biscuits and Nabisco, the original shredded wheat. For The Adventures of Rin Tin Tin on television, consult your local paper for time and station. This is Don Morrow speaking, and this program came to you transcribed from New York.
I could never stand shredded wheat. I figured if they shredded it, somebody was probably trying to throw it away.
Yeah, or hiding something. I was impressed I couldn't tell the difference between the real dog noises and that of Bob Barker.
Yes.
Come on down.
Neuter your game show host. Erie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
Never trust a quiet dog. February 8th, 1960, Ren Tin Tin was honored with a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
And highly overdue.
But he traded it for a milk biscuit. Yep.
Well, by 1960, I think the Ren Tin Tin was long gone, but he expired in 32, right? Okay, this is weird. Yes, yep. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say it could have been Ren Tin Tin the ninth or something, you know?
Yeah, it could have been, you know. So this is the weird rabbit hole that sometimes things lead you down. So I was like, Ren Tin Tin got a star on Hollywood Walk of Fame. Did Lassie? Yes, Lassie did. And then I went looking on Wikipedia, and I was like, ooh, Wikipedia needs editing. There's data on Wikipedia that's wrong about Lassie. Lassie had a Filmation cartoon in the 70s.
Yes.
And survey says 1970 to 1975. Yes, Lassie rescued Rangers by the ill-fated and Filmation Associates. I'm not a fan of Filmation, but, you know, okay, sure. But anyway, yeah, they did the Archies, they did the Groovy Ghoulies, they did Shazam, they did the original 1960s Superman and Batman and Aquaman and all that fun stuff.
And a lot of radio about Doges.
Doges,
as some young people call them. Our canine friend.
Dawson? Oh, yes.
Dave, you've had dogs
Who?
Too, haven't you?
What?
I know you have, Gar.
I have one for my family. I had one that was mine. It was a stray that was running around the school. I happened to be there that morning, dropped my kids off, and the principal put it in his office, and I ended up taking it home.
Ah, there you go. Some of those
there
are the best
go.
Kind, the ones you rescue.
And never let your five-year-old name the dog, because that's how the dog got to be named Ruff Ruff.
Okay.
Better than it could have been named Poopyhead, you know. So that's better. Rough, rough.
My son named a fish Doorknob. Yes, he was about four, and he wanted to name the fish. So or five, maybe he was. I don't know. And you know, I want to name him, but he couldn't think of any. So we were getting impatient. Name the fish already! And he's glancing around frantically. Doorknob. So that stuck, Doorknob.
I'm not sure if this is the correct use of the term. That might be a gestalt wandering about either the child or the fish. I'm not sure. Maybe the fish is a doorknob. You know.
Well, the boy was born in a certain city in Ohio.
Yeah, there we go, doorknobby fish. All the fish named Doorknob come from Parma. Whoa.
That says it all, doesn't it?
It says a lot. It says something. My boinger's off. Sorry, guys.
That's kind of personal. You
can
worse, boinger to
nothing,
there
nothing
we go.
Worse,
okay.
Yeah, nothing worse than an off boinger.
Oh, it's off.
Got another show, don't we?
We do. We've got two more.
We got two
Maybe.
More, but if
Maybe.
We had, yeah, we'll see. It'll be tight. That's when we get right into it. This is the third week.
Okay.
From coming to us out of WXYZ Detroit. First was the Lone Ranger. Second was Green Hornet. The third was
the
Challenge of the Yukon. With
Challenge
with Yukon
of
Cold Pants. Of the Yukon with Yukon King. So we had a horse named Silver and a car named Black Beauty, and a dog named King.
And a fish named Doorknob.
Okay, anyway.
Here you go. And this one is from...
This is July 5th, 1947.
The challenge of the Yukon. It's King, swiftest and strongest lead dog of the North Country, blazing the trail for Sergeant Preston of the Northwest Mounted Police in his relentless pursuit of lawbreakers.
On King! On
gold. Gold discovered in the Yukon. A stampede to the Klondike in the greedy race for riches. Now back to the days of the gold rush when Sergeant Preston and his wonder dog King battled through storm and snow to preserve law and order as they met the challenge of the Yukon. Sergeant Preston, with his dog King at his side, knocked at the door of Jim Crane's cabin on the outskirts of Dawson. The door was opened by young Tommy, Jim's 12-year-old son.
Hello, Sergeant Preston. Come in. How are you, King, old fella?
How are you, Tommy? Your father here?
He'll be here any minute now, I think. He went over to Tim Lacey's to look at some furs. Take your park off and sit down, Sergeant.
Thanks, Tom. I came over to have a look at those sled dogs your dad has to sell.
They're out in the kennel. Did Dad tell you that Vixen had her pups?
Yes. They're about 10 days old now, aren't they?
Yeah, and the cutest things you ever saw.
Huh?
I've got one of them right here in this box. Will King hurt him if I show him to you?
Oh, no. King won't hurt a puppy. Come here, King. Down, boy.
Oh, look at him, Sergeant. Isn't he a beauty?
Oh, I should say so. Let's have a look at you, young fellow. Oh, he's a good dog. Nice bones and build.
His stomach is all swollen up. Guess he ate too much dinner.
That reminds me of the last case I was on.
Was it that bank robbery?
Yes, Tom. I just got back a few days ago.
I heard something about it. Gee, Sergeant, what happened? Will you tell me about it? As long as you're going to be waiting for Dad, you'll have time.
Why, sure. But you'd better put this little fellow back in his box. I think he's sleepy.
Guess I'd better. He always gets sleepy after he eats. Yeah, Spot. Go to sleep. Gee, Sergeant, I've been waiting to hear about you getting those robbers. You discovered that the bank had been robbed before anybody, didn't
yes,
you?
Yes, I did. But the robbery was evidently planned about a week before. There were two men who arrived in Dawson about that time with the names of Hank Sims and Tim Johnson. They came into the Gold Nugget Bar quite often, but didn't mix with the other men very much. However, they did manage to meet Jed Wilcox, the old man who sleeps in the back room of the bank. They called him to their table one night.
Look over there, Jim. That's the old codger I was telling you about.
He don't look very dangerous. You sure he's the one who guards the bank?
Pretty sure. He's coming this way. This is as good a time as any to find out.
Hello, mister.
Oh, howdy. Well, I don't remember seeing you in town before. You strangers?
Sit down and get acquainted.
I won't be able to stay with you long. I got to go to work.
You don't work at night, do you?
Yep, I do. I came up to the Yukon to look for gold, same as everybody else, but my luck ran out on me, I guess. Before I hit any pay dirt, I had a bad accident. I slipped on some ice and injured my back. I was in a pretty bad spot, I can tell you.
Are you the bank clerk?
Oh, no. I ain't very good at figures. I just sleep in the back room, watching it from there.
That sounds easy enough.
Well, it ain't too hard, but it don't pay much. I guess I'm lucky to be working at all, though.
Hank and Tim waited almost a week before going ahead with their plan. They bought a good dog team and loaded up with supplies. And at midnight, one night when it was snowing and cold and the town was quiet, they drove up to the bank.
Can you get it open, Tim?
Getting locks open is my business. This is nothing. There, it's open.
Easy now. You get over and turn that lantern down a little. Someone might see us from the street.
I'm going to need a little light to crack that safe. There ain't anybody on the street. We're safe now.
Old Jed is a sound sleeper.
Yeah.
Oh, you clumsy fool.
I couldn't help it. It slipped out of my hand.
You woke the old man up. Get over there beside that door.
Who's there? Hey, what are you doing?
Yeah, that did it. He won't give us any trouble now.
Good. I wonder if the old duffer saw me.
He didn't get a chance. I got him the minute he stuck his head in.
Now tie him up and gag him. Now you get back and see what you can do about that safe. We better get out of here fast.
I was coming home from a patrol north. Got into town early that morning before anybody was up. When I passed the bank, I noticed that the door was open. I stopped the dog team and decided to have a look.
Hurricane! Oh, yes, sir. Hey, King, come along, come on.
Funny. There's nobody here. What is it, King? Good. Wait a minute. I'll get that gag out of your mouth. There. Are you hurt?
Thanks, Sergeant. I'm hurt, but not too bad.
Good. I'll untie these ropes. There.
Oh, I've been lying on this floor all night. I'm cold and stiff.
I'll help you up, Jed. Now, sit over here near the stove. There's not much fire in it, but I'll poke it up.
The bank's been robbed, Sergeant.
Tell me about it while I fix this fire.
Oh, I got a lump on my head the size of a hen's egg. They hit me with the butt of a gun. Lucky I got a good thick head. I wouldn't be here to tell you about it.
Have you got a look at them at all?
Yes, I saw one of them.
Huh?
It's a man who's been hanging around the Gold Nugget Bar for about a week. He's a big fella with a scar on his face from his left eye down to his lip. His beard don't cover it.
Do you know his name?
Well, I heard the bartender call him Hank one night. Maybe he can tell you something about him.
I'll check there later. Now, tell me what happened.
Well, I sleep in the back room here, you know.
Yes.
Well, last night I woke up and thought I heard a noise. I keep a lantern burning in here all night. So I got my gun and came to see what was wrong. When I opened the door, I saw this Hank standing in the middle of the room. Just then, something hit me from behind.
His partner was probably waiting beside the door when you opened it.
I never knew what hit me. When I woke up, I was tied and gagged and couldn't move a muscle.
It's a wonder they didn't kill you.
This Hank fella didn't know what a good look I got of him, or he probably would have. He just happened to be standing where the lantern light showed up that scar on his face.
Well, how much did they take?
We had over $50,000 worth of gold in this bank. And they took every bit of it, I suppose.
Well, we checked, and the thieves had taken everything they could carry. $50,000 worth of gold in dust and nuggets is a heavy load. It had snowed early that morning, but I remembered seeing rather a fresh trail when I came into town. The tracks were deep, and the snow hadn't quite filled them. I hadn't passed a sled or a team on the way, so they may have heard me coming and hidden. I reported the case to headquarters and asked to be assigned to it. Inspector Grayson gave me my instructions.
Oh, Sergeant, I'm sending a man with you on this case. It's Corporal Terry. He's just been transferred here from Montreal. You've met him, haven't you?
I met him this morning, sir.
Jim Terry's a good man, but this is his first trip north. Knowing the north the way you do, Sergeant, I can't think of a better way for him to learn than going on a case with you.
Well, thank you, sir.
We have a very accurate description of these men who robbed the bank. You can't miss Hank Sims, as he calls himself, with that scar on his face. The man who's with him has two fingers missing on his left hand. His name is Tim Johnson.
I'm sure they must have left town by the trail that I came in on, sir.
That's very possible, Sergeant. I think you and Couple Terry had better try that direction. Perhaps you can pick up some information at trading posts or from trappers along the way. At least it's a place to start. Remember, they have a heavy load, Sergeant, and won't be able to travel very fast.
I was glad to have young Corporal Terry with me. We seldom travel alone at this time of year because the temperature's liable to drop to 50 or 60 below zero. And it's very dangerous to be alone on the trail when that happens. Corporal Terry's initiation to the ways of the North Country wasn't easy. First day we were out, the temperature fell to 65 below zero. So we holed up in the trapper's cabin for a day or two. But the men we were after didn't dare to stop. They had a heavy load on their sled and didn't want to be seen by anybody. Hank Sims and his partner Tim Johnson were mushing along the trail that led along a creek when the temperature dropped. Tim wasn't used to the noise.
Hank, we got to stop and build a fire. This coal is eating right into my bone.
Yeah, we can't stop. This ain't the time to go soft. They'll have a Mountie on our trail by this time, sure.
But my foot's numb.
Keep moving. If you stop, you'll freeze.
My foot. Hank, wait.
Oh, hold there.
Hank, my foot broke through. It's wet.
Oh, you fool. I told you to watch out for spots like that on this creek. I get that boot off right away.
Yeah. How can there be water when it's so cold?
This creek is fed by springs. The snow and ice freezes over the top, but there's a pool of water under it. I told you to watch out. Now get a fire belt.
Hey, my hand, my fingers are numb. I can't open these laces.
You should have cut them open. Your hand is frozen. Don't you know you can't take off a mitten in this temperature? Oh, why did I bring you with me, you stupid fool?
Hey, my foot, there ain't no feeling in it. I can't walk.
By the time I build a fire and get your foot fixed, we'll lose hours of time.
Maybe I could ride on the sled. Maybe we could like
it. We got too big a load now. If you think we're going to drop off supplies so you can ride, you're crazy.
But, Hank, my foot's froze solid. It's like a piece of ice.
I ain't going to lose time just because you're a fool. I told you to be careful.
Hank, don't leave me. I can't walk.
Marsh, you husky. Marsh.
Hank, come back. Don't leave me. Hank.
2 days later, Corporal Terry and I were mushing along that same creek. We weren't at all sure that we were on the trail of the thieves, but I was heading for a trading post where I hoped Hank might have stopped. All of a sudden, King barked up ahead of the team.
Oh, hurry, Huskies.
Something wrong, Sergeant?
Yes, Corporal. Look there, beside the creek.
You mean that white figure? It's like a snowman.
It's a man covered with snow. Come on. Look out, Terry. Go around that place. That's one of those traps I was telling you about. There's a spring under the ice right there.
I got to watch where I was going.
Yes, King. It's a man, all right.
Why, look. He froze to death sitting up.
They were fools to try and travel at low temperature. They didn't know the country too well.
Sergeant, do you think he's one of the men we're after?
Yes. Now we know we're on the right trail. Look here, Corporal. His left hand, the one without the mitten. Two fingers are missing.
But the other one, the other man, Hank, why didn't he take him on a sled or something?
Well, you see this foot? Has ice all over it, like an icy boot. Tim probably stepped into a hole, and Hank didn't want to waste any precious time saving him.
But to leave him like this, to freeze.
I know, we know what kind of a man we're after.
But he's left a clear trail in the snow.
Yeah, but look, it's beginning to snow. Big flakes, too.
This trail will be covered in less than an hour. At least we know what territory he is in, Sergeant.
We covered Tim's body with branches and went on.
Hey, folks, can you hear me out there? Hey, we're not sure what happened. The radio program stopped. Hopefully you can hear me broadcasting. Want to say something in the chat if you can? That'd be awesome. As we move along and the boys are back after being booted out of the studio. Unfortunately, it works. So, well, we got the chance. Let's rush off and finish the puppy challenge of the Yukon. Here's part two.
The temperature was higher, but the snowfall was very heavy, and we lost a lot of time breaking the trail. Complete darkness had fallen, and we were about 5 miles past the trading post, and I headed for the lights of the Cranston cabin. The Cransons were friends of mine.
The Cransons will put us up tonight, Corporal. You're a nice family. You'll like them.
A family, you say? You mean a wife, maybe children?
Yes, a little girl. Her name's Jane, and she's about 10 years old.
Why would a man bring a wife and child way out here in the wilderness?
Jim makes a good living trapping in winter, and he takes a lot of gold out of the creek in summer. He'll have enough to retire soon and go back to civilization. Oh, They must have heard us coming. There's Jim now.
Who is it?
It's Preston, Jim.
Working.
Hello,
your husband. Well, Sergeant, I'm sure glad to see you.
This is Corporal Terry, Jim Cranston.
Well, hello, Corporal.
Can you put us up for the night?
I sure can.
Good.
Molly has supper ready, too. Come on in.
I'll take care of the dog, Sergeant. You go on in.
Oh, thanks, Corporal. Give them a lot of food. They've had a tough day. I'll take King in with me. Come on, boy.
Molly, it's Sergeant Preston.
Hello, Molly.
Sergeant, how are you?
Sergeant Preston. Oh, goody.
Hello, Jane. How's my best girl?
Oh, Sergeant, I'm so glad you came. I've got something to show you. Look, over here by the stove.
Jane, give the sergeant time to take his park off.
Oh, he can do it later, Mommy. Look, I got a new puppy.
What?
Oh, King won't hurt him, will he?
No. Go on back, King. Why, he's a beautiful pup.
Do you want to hold him? Come on,
Frisky. Oh, he's nice. But, great Scott, look at that stomach.
He's swollen up like a balloon.
Jane fed him too much.
Oh?
Jim and I went to the trading post this afternoon. We got back just a little while ago, and Jane had just finished overfeeding him.
See.
I thought he must be very hungry because he ate half of one of my moccasins. So I gave him all he could hold. He sure can hold a lot, too. Well,
pups are little gluttons, Jane. They like to eat. But getting all they can hold isn't too good for them.
He swells up like that after all his meals.
So would you if you ate the way he does.
Well, he'll get skinny again. He always does. I never saw anything get so fat and skinny so fast.
Put the puppy on the floor, Sergeant, and take your park off.
There you go, Frisky. I'll be nice to him, King. Jane, you see that they make friends with each other.
I will. Oh, look at Frisky. He's so afraid of King. He's lying on his back and waving his feet in the air.
Let me check your things, Sergeant.
Oh, well, thanks, John.
Make yourself comfortable beside the fire.
Thanks, I will.
Dog's all right for the night.
Oh, Molly, this is Corporal Terry, Mrs. Cranston.
How do you do?
How do you do, Mrs. Cranston?
Jim will take your parka, Corporal. Just sit down and get warm.
Thanks.
I'll have supper ready in no time.
Here you are, Jim. Oh, this fire certainly feels good.
Are you boys up here for any special reason?
We're trailing a bank robber, Jim. He got away with a fortune in gold. You haven't seen anything of a man with a scar on his face and a black beard, have you?
Well, a couple of days ago, right after that cold spell we had, I saw a man with a six-dog team.
Huh?
I was coming home from my trap line. He crossed the trail just as I was coming to it. I yelled at him, thinking he might be someone I knew. But he didn't stop. He just waved and kept right on going.
Was he packing a heavy load?
He sure was. His dogs were having a rough time breaking the trail.
Sounds like our man. The time would be about right, too.
He was headed towards the mountains.
He may hide out somewhere around here for a while. If I were you, Jim, I'd keep Jane close to the house for a few days. It's lonely around here.
I'll do that, Sergeant.
By a streak of good fortune, we picked up Hank's trail again the next day. My team was fresh, and we made excellent time over the hard snow crust. That night, we camped out and got an early start the following morning. The mountains loomed close now. It was noon, and we came upon a campsite. Working! Hello, you huskies! This looks like the place Hank slept last night, Terry.
You think we're that close on his heels?
Yes, he's lost time somewhere. Of course, he hasn't given his dogs much rest, and they're pulling a lot of weight. We can go about twice as fast.
How do you suppose he figures to get up that mountain trail with a tired team?
I think that's where we'll catch him, Corporal, unless he outsmarts us some way.
If he once gets through those mountains, he might be able to make the border.
He's not going to get through those mountains. Come on.
On King! On your
We had no trouble following Hank's trail then. The wind had blown the loose snow away and left a hard-packed crust. But here and there, Hank's sled had made an imprint. And now and then we saw footprints where the snow was protected from the wind. There was very little daylight left when we approached the mountains. The trail led up like a great curved snake and jagged rocks hung over it. Suddenly, there was a gunshot. I heard the whine of a bullet past my head and a dull plop as it hit the snow. I shouted at the dogs. Halting! Hurry, your huskies! Get down, Terry, behind the sled, quick!
Say, that was close.
Back here, King. Here, fella. Down, boy.
Hank must have seen us coming.
He's up on that mountain trail to the left, behind those rocks. He's probably been watching for us.
There. I saw him that time.
He couldn't wait any longer. It's getting dark. Hope he doesn't shoot the dogs.
Guess we were closer to him than we thought we were.
Wish we had more shelter. Maybe I can get a bead on him.
That worked from this side.
It's hard to see him in that shadow.
Sergeant, look. Up above him.
Those rocks. Those shots started an avalanche. We're all right. We're not in this path.
I never saw anything like that in my life. Looked as if half a mountain fell on him.
I'm afraid that's the end of Hank.
He's buried under tons of ice and rock.
And I'm afraid that's the end of the bank's gold, too. It's buried with him.
But can a shot start an avalanche like that?
Oh, yes. Rocks get loaded with ice and snow, and any slight jar can start them down. And once started, they take everything in their path.
It was the most horrible thing I ever saw. Glad we weren't any closer.
I think it's safe to go over there now. Come on, Terry. Let's see what we can find.
All right, Sergeant. Hard to believe a shot can do that.
Of course, our task was a hopeless one. We couldn't even get near the spot where Hank had last been seen. There were tons of ice and rocks covering the trail, and Hank was buried far beneath them. We camped at the base of the mountain that night and started back the following day. I decided to stop on the way home to tell the Cransons that they no longer had to worry about a criminal in that vicinity. It was about noon, 2 days later, when we arrived at their cabin.
Hello, Hello, Sergeant Preston. Hello, Corporal.
We're back sooner than I thought we'd be, Molly.
Come on in. Jim and Jane aren't here, but they will be soon. Sit down and take your coats off while I make some hot tea.
Thanks. I could sure use some.
Did you get the man you were after?
Not exactly, but he won't bother anyone anymore. He's dead.
Dead? Oh, dear.
He got caught in an avalanche right in front of us. It buried him and all the gold he stole.
Won't they be able to recover it?
I'm afraid not.
Well, at least the country's rid of a thief and a murderer. When I think of him leading that man to freeze, it's worth all the money to be rid of him.
The bank won't be too happy about it, I'm afraid. What'd you say Jim was?
He's out with Jane looking for Frisky. Pup's been gone for a day and a night, and Jane's almost frantic.
Oh, Sergeant Preston, I'm so glad you came back. You and King will find Frisky. I know you will.
Tell me about it, Jane.
Jane, dear, Sergeant Preston can't waste time hunting for puppies. He's on duty.
Oh, but I love Frisky. He's the only thing that's all mine. And if I don't find him, I'll just die, that's all.
Now, Jane, dear, don't cry. Of course we'll help you find your pup.
You will? Oh, Sergeant, I just knew you would.
Really, Sergeant? It's too much to ask you to do this. It will take too much time. Jane, dear, you can't...
Now, Molly, after all, Jane's a citizen. She lost a puppy, and she has a right to ask the law to help her get it back. What do you say, Corporal Terry?
I agree with you.
You see, Molly?
Oh, thank you. I knew you'd know how I felt, because you love Jane so much.
Now, tell me about Frisky. When did he disappear?
Well, it was yesterday morning. He ran away from me. I couldn't go after him because Mother made me promise not to go away from the house. I'm so afraid he got caught in a trap or something. Daddy's still looking for him. But I thought I heard King barking, so I came back to the house. Oh, there's Daddy now. Daddy, did you find him?
No, Jane. Hello, Sergeant.
Hello, Jim.
How are you, Terry?
That's fine.
Did you lose track of the robbery you were chasing?
No, we got him, but I'd better tell you about it later, Jim.
Sergeant Preston, Corporal Terry are going to help us find Frisky.
Well, I'm afraid it's hopeless, Jane. I've looked pretty thoroughly.
Didn't he leave any tracks?
Well, there were some leading away from the cabin where the snow was loose, but they end over here a ways. The snow crust is hard, the wind blew the loose snow away. He was so light, he didn't leave any tracks on the crust.
Well, at least you know what direction he took.
Well, he was a strong pup. I'm afraid he wandered a long way off. Maybe got caught in a trap. Or Wolf may have got him.
Oh, Daddy, no. Sergeant Preston.
No, don't worry, Jane. Maybe King can help us find him.
Oh, King knows it. They got to be good friends when you stay here that night.
Well, this is too much to ask of you, Sergeant. You lose too much time. After being on a manhunt, this seems rather foolish.
Not at all, Jim. Frisky means more to Jane than that gold does to the bank. I know how I'd feel if King were missing.
Oh, can we start looking right now?
Well, first of all, we have to let King know what we're looking for, dear. Have you anything here that smells like Frisky so that King can get the scent?
Oh, dear. I brushed Frisky so much and kept him so clean that he didn't smell at all.
Well, that's not what I mean, Jane. You see, dogs can smell things that humans can't. Everything has some sort of scent, and a dog's nose is very keen. He depends on that more than he does his eyes.
Frisky's blanket is in his box. Would that do, Sergeant?
Well, that'll be fine, Molly. I'll let King smell that, and we'll find Frisky if he's still alive.
I'll get it, Sergeant. I just know King will find Frisky.
I've trained King to find things by giving him the scent and telling him to search. We found a lot of people that way by letting him smell a garment they've worn. Well, we took Frisky's blanket with us and followed the tracks he'd left. They went north and ended, as Jim said, where the snow crust was hard and shiny. I let King smell the blanket, and from there on, he took over. We crisscrossed back and forth for a time, and then a light wind came up from the north. Suddenly, King sniffed the air, whined, and started off in a straight line. We were almost a mile from the cabin, but little James struggled along with us. King would wait for us and then continue straight ahead.
All right, King, we're coming.
Oh, this thing knows where Frisky is, Sergeant.
He seems to be after something, Jane.
Jane, dear, aren't you tired? Why don't you wait here for us?
I'm not tired, Dad.
Sergeant, King seems to have found something. He's stopping beside that big rock.
I see King, but I don't see any sign of Frisky.
Maybe he found a rabbit or something.
No, King knows what he's looking for.
I hope it's Frisky.
There's a pile of small rocks piled up against that big one.
What is it, fella?
He's scratching at those rocks, looking through that crack between them.
Listen, it's Frisky. Frisky, is that you? Oh, it is. It's Frisky.
Work through these rocks and get him out of there. Come on, Terry.
I'll help you. See how he got in here. This one will do it.
Ah, here he is.
Oh, Frisky. I'm so glad to get you back.
Look at him. How fat he is, a stomach. After being in there for 2 days.
Wait a minute. Come on, boys. Help me move some more of these rocks.
Sure. Here, I'll get this one here.
Yeah, that does it. Something in that hole in the side of the big rock.
What is it?
There's something. Well, it's like a dried fish ripped open. And there's more food in there, I think. Wait, I'll get it.
This must be somebody's cache.
What's a cache, Daddy?
Well, it's a place where someone hides food to use later. He comes back from a trip along the same route.
There's more than food in this one. Look at this, Jim.
It's a bag.
A bag of gold. The bag belongs to the bank in Dawson. Corporal? I think this gold was hidden here by Hank Sims.
You mean the man you were chasing?
That's right. He hid the gold here along with a lot of supplies. And that gave him a light load to carry, and he planned to lead us off into the mountains where he could ambush us.
Then he'd come back, pick up the gold and supplies.
Or maybe he thought he'd get over the border and come back after we'd stopped chasing him. You see, he couldn't have made it with a heavy load of gold.
And now you can take the gold back to the bank.
Yes, thanks to Frisky.
But how did Frisky get in there? And why didn't he come out the same way and come home?
Well, Jane, I think Frisky went exploring. He must have smelled the food in here with the gold, squeezed through a crack between the rocks. But after he ate all he could, his stomach was too big to get out again, so he probably just lay down and went to sleep.
But he always gets thin when he hasn't eaten for a while.
But when he's thin, dear, he's hungry. So when he woke up, he filled up again and couldn't get out. Come on, Corporal. Let's get the rest of the gold out of here.
That pup is sure a little glutton.
Oh, but I love him. And I love King, too.
So, Tommy, that's how we got the gold back for the bank. Some of it was your father's, I think.
Gee, Sergeant, that was swell. I hope I can train my pup the way you did King.
Oh, it isn't hard if you're patient.
We're sure lucky that you thought the pup was just as important to find as gold.
Well, it was important, Tommy. A dog is a good friend, and a faithful friend is much more important than gold. Isn't it, King?
Con, that was called the puppy. Direct from the pound, Erie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
A fire! own dog is worth more than any lost treasure.
There you go. All right.
So true.
So true.
Arr.
My dog's better than your dog. My dog's better than yours. My dog's better because he gets kennel rich. And my dog's better than yours. My dog's bigger than your dog. My dog's smarter than yours. My dog's better because he gets kennel rich. And my dog's better than yours.
Now, my favorite was the Chuck Wagon, the animated Chuck Wagon.
Yeah. Yeah,
that was cool.
The
that was a
room
cool
into
dog.
The kitchen and...
yep. That was a cool dog food commercial.
Well, that and those Kettle Ration burgers, too.
Oh,
little,
yeah.
Little hamburgers.
My dog's better than yours.
Yeah.
My dog's better than yours. My dog's better because he gets Kettle Ration. My dog's better than yours.
I always wanted that dog to catch that wagon.
Yes.
I know, me too.
But before it got into the bed.
Out.
Yeah.
Tear the little
Yeah, you know. Did they ever do that on Land of the Giants? Did a dog ever go after? I think it did.
I think a dog and a cat.
Yeah, they had all kinds. Yeah.
Land of the Giants was cool.
Yeah.
Good show.
It was crazy. That was weird. Whoever thought that being small could be so horrifying.
Well, we could be a little grateful for that technical glitch a little bit earlier, because now that leaves us time for another episode of Lassie. This one is a dog named Tramp.
Yes.
January 11th, 1948, according to 18 Cats in Illinois.
From Hollywood, John Morrell and Company, makers of three-flavor Red Heart, America's favorite dog food, presents Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer's lovable motion picture star, Lassie. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, Red Heart presents the world's most famous dog, Lassie, in person. Now, you know what hot weather does to your appetite and how important it is for your meals to be appetizing. Well, that dog of yours appreciates appetizing meals, too. And when you feed him the Red Heart way, he always welcomes his dinner, because all three delicious Red Heart flavors are flavors dogs like: beef, fish, and cheese. Feed those three Red Heart flavors in rotation so that your dog doesn't get tired of his food. He'll not only enjoy Red Heart, but it's so good for him that it's sure to keep him healthy, happy, and handsome. Get a supply of three-flavor Red Heart now. And now to introduce our story, followed by this week's Red Heart Award for Valor, here is Lassie's owner and trainer, Rudd Weatherwax.
Thank you, Charlie, and hello, everyone. Well, today, Lassie and I have a story for you about a dog named Tramp. Not much of a dog, I guess, but full of courage when he needed it most. The story started when Tommy Clark and his father decided to go down to the nearby river for an afternoon of fishing.
Gee, it's such a swell day, Dad. Maybe I could get a little swimming in, do you think?
No reason why not, son.
Well, if the fish aren't biting, that is. Pete Norman was down yesterday, said he got more catfish than his folks could eat in three meals.
Well, might be biting as good today.
Oh, I hope so.
My fish, will you?
Hey, look, Dad. What's that man doing with that dog on the riverbank?
He's got a rope around the dog's neck and the inside to a big rock. He's going to drown, it looks like.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, mister, what's wrong with the dog?
Nothing! It's a tramp dog, and he snuck up behind me and ate my string of fish. Well, this rock around his neck will give him all the fish he wants in that river.
Say, that's a nasty thing to do, throw a dog in the river to drown because of a few fish.
Yeah, you think so? Well, if you're so sorry for the muck,
don't
get him.
Oh, gosh, Dad, I'm going to pull that dog out. I've got my scout knife. I'll dive down and cut the rope.
Hey, wait, Pop. Oh, that kid risking his life for a muck dog.
I got him, Dad.
Here, grab my hand. I'll pull you in.
Okay.
I got the dog by the collar. Now, up you come.
Oh, gee, Dad. Is he dead?
No, not by a long shot. Let's get to work and get the water out of his lungs. He'll be all right.
Well, that man said he was a tramp dog, so he's mine now, because I saved him.
the boy. Oh, God. Oh, hi, Dad. Here I am. Hey, Dad, look how strong Tramp's teeth are. Now, watch, Dad. Okay, Tramp? Tug of war. Tug of war. That's it, boy. Grab hold of the clothesline. Now, tug of war. Pull, Tramp.
That's pretty good. But you mustn't make him pull on the rope too much. It might loosen his teeth.
Okay, Dad. That's enough, Tramp.
And you better put away Mom's clothesline.
Okay, Dad.
I came to tell you we'd better not count on fishing tomorrow. The river's rising bad.
Oh, honest? Oh, I haven't been near the river for a week. Tramp's scared of the water.
Well, you can hardly blame him after his experience. But mind what I say now. The river's rising fast. Looks like a flood's on the way. If you go down there, be careful, Tom.
Oh, I will, Dad. Hey, Tramp. Let's go down to the river, huh, boy? Gee, if it's flooding, we might find some swell stuff floating down. Come on, Tramp. Come on, Tramp. The old river won't hurt you. Oh, all right. You stay here. I'm going down to the bank. Hey, boy. Look at the swell stuff that floated down and got stuck on the island. Boy, here I can see a wheelbarrow and the doghouse. Hey, Tramp, look out on the island. There's a swell little doghouse for you. Oh, come on, Tramp, you big sissy. I bet I could row to the island and get that doghouse. 30 or 40 feet. I think I can fly the rowboat in the water by myself. I'm going to try. Sure. Got to get the oars in the oar locks first. The river's running pretty fast. Now I'll just shove. There, man. Boy, I better start rowing. This current is fast. Current's awful strong. It keeps turning the boat. Not much further, though. One or two more good strong. Oh, the boat's tipping. Help! 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 Help!
Where the dickens is Tom?
Well, I'm sure I don't know, Frank. I've called and called. He's always home by this time. Oh, there he is now. I hear Tramp barking.
Well, thank goodness. I'm starved. For the love of Mike, Tom, where have you... Well, Mother, the dog's all alone. Tom's not with him.
Not with him, but why? What's that? Tramp acts like he wanted us to follow him.
Mother, the river. It's awful bad. Do you think...
Frank, quickly. Let's go, dear. Hurry.
Yes. Come on. Oh, wait. Let me take this clothesline. Tramp! Find Tom. Find Tom, Tramp. That's where he's taking us. Straight to the riverbank.
Oh, Frank. I wonder... I hope nothing's happened.
I bet you just got to be ready for anything.
Here's the river. Oh, Frank, let's hurry.
No, no, take it easy, Mother. Here we are. Careful now. The bank's off.
I don't see Tom.
There! Mother! Over here!
Tom! He's on the island, Mother.
Tom! Tom!
Tom, where's our rowboat?
It's tipped over, Dad.
But if the boat's gone, how... Frank, this river's rising fast. The island will be underwater in an hour or two.
I know it, Mother. I got to figure out a way to get this rope across the channel.
No, Tramp, come here. That dog looks almost as though he was going to jump in the water.
Hey, Tramp's trying to get up enough nerve to swim out to the island. He wants to get to Tom. Tramp, come here. Stand still now, Tramp.
What are you going to do, Tramp?
I'm going to tie the end of this clothesline to Tramp's collar and see if I can't get him to swim to Tom. There we are.
Oh, no, he'll never do that. That dog's desperately afraid of water.
I know, but he's even more afraid of losing Tom. Look at him, Mother. Tom! Call Tramp! Call him, boy!
Tramp! Here, Tramp! Tramp!
Go on, boy.
Tramp.
Go to Tom, Tramp.
Tramp.
He did it, Mother. Tramp did it. Swim, Tramp! Swim!
Come on, Tramp! Oh, that's a dog. Come on, Tramp! Just a little farther and I can grab your collar. Oh, swim hard, Tramp. Swim. Is that a boy, Tramp? Come on.
Come on. Got you, Tramp. Up you go.
Trampy, old boy. Oh, you did it. You swam to me.
Tom, hurry, Tom. The river's getting back.
Well, what'll I do now, Dad?
Tie the rope to that tree. I got this end tied over here. You'll have to come hand over hand to it.
Okay, Dad.
Tie the rope to this tree. That's good as I... Okay.
Come on, Tramp. Let's get in the water and get back to land.
Well, come on, Tramp.
Well, you gotta swim back. You just got to.
Oh, and... Now what I gotta do. First, I'll cut off this extra piece of rope. Now, I'm gonna tie this one. End of it tight to my belt. Like that. Now I'll tie the other end to your collar. I just gotta pull you in the water, Trampy, if you won't go in yourself again.
Don't you worry, Mother. That boy's got nerve. He'll make it fine.
Keep going, Tommy. That's it. Hand over hand. Tom, look out for that log. Look out, Tom.
Frank, he's gone under.
Gosh, that broken log broke the rope.
There's Tramp.
And there's Tom. Tom.
Look, Frank. Tramp's got the end of the broken rope in his mouth.
Yeah. Look out, Beth. Maybe I can pull him in. Tramp, hang on. Tug of war, Tramp. Tug of war!
Oh, he's holding. Fall, Frank, fall hard!
Then, how do you feel? Well, Mom, it sure feels good to be in bed again.
You had a bad time, son. You'd be dead right now if it wasn't for old Tramp.
No.
Yes, you old... Good old dog.
Oh, Tramp. How can we ever thank you? Oh,
come here. Come here, Trampy, old boy. Oh, golly.
Well, looks like old Tramp is even the score. He's paid Tom off in full for saving him from Old Man River.
Thank you, Lassie, for an exciting story. Now, friends, in just a moment, Rudd Weatherwax will be back to present this week's Red Heart Award for Valor. But first, a word from our star.
Say, Lassie, you know, speaking of valor, it seems to me that Tramp, the dog in this week's story, was pretty valorous himself. Don't you agree? Yes, sir. It's pretty plain that dogs learn the lesson of loyalty in a hurry, right? And one of the finest things you can do for him in return, day in, day out, is to see that he gets Red Heart every meal. All three of those delicious Red Heart flavors, beef, fish, and cheese, contain exactly the same wholesome meat and meat byproducts plus other nourishing ingredients to keep your dog in top condition. And at the same time, those three flavors, fed in rotation, give your dog the taste variety he welcomes. So feed your dog the Red Heart way, starting right now. Red Heart is federally inspected dog food, you know, good for your dog in every way. And it's so quick, so easy to feed that you'll appreciate it, too. Keep all three Red Heart flavors on hand and feed them in rotation. Red Heart is the food your dog needs and wants. And now, Lassie's owner and trainer, Rudd Weatherwax.
Thanks, Charlie. This week, our Red Heart Award for Valor is presented to a dog named Tippy of Seattle, Washington.
When a bandit entered the store of Mr. and Mrs. John Darrow and said, as he struck Mrs. Darrow with the butt of his pistol, "This is a stick-up," Tippy bounded from the living quarters in the rear of the store and drove the armed bandit away.
So today, in recognition of Tippy's bravery, we are sending Tippy a heart-shaped sterling silver locket for his collar, bearing the inscription,
"Red Heart Award for Valor to Tippy, for rescuing his mistress, Mrs. Ina Darrow."
And along with Tippy's award goes a salute from Lassie. And a case of Red Heart, the food that all good dogs deserve.
And to Mr. and Mrs. John Darrow of Seattle, Washington, our congratulations on having a swell dog like Tippy. Next week, Lassie plays the part of a very cranky old dog that belonged to a very cranky old man. Don't miss it. Lassie is presented each week at this same time by John Morrell and Company, makers of three-flavor Red Heart, the taste-tested food that your dog will enjoy, the health-tested food that will keep him in shape. Lassie appeared by arrangement with Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, who invite you to see their Technicolor production of Alexander Dumas' The Three Musketeers, starring Lana Turner, Gene Kelly, and June Allison. This program is produced in Hollywood by Frank Perrin, directed by Harry Stewart, story by Hobart Donovan. And now, a final reminder. The best way to provide for your future, the future of your family, is to buy U.S. savings bonds. Buy them where you work, on the payroll savings plan. Or if you are your own boss, buy where you bank, on the bond a month plan. But buy them. U.S. savings bonds represent your belief in your own future, your belief in America. This is Charles Lyon.
And that was our final good dog tale. Tomorrow it'll be bad dogs. But before we get into tomorrow,
bad dog.
Erie House Radio proudly presents. Guys, moral of the story. Damn it.
Possession is 9/10 of your way to becoming a demon.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Well, see, possession started in the beginning of the story with, well, I'll take the dog you're going to throw in the river. So I figured possession 9/10, you know. Anyway.
Sure. Yeah. No, I got it. Yeah.
Or what else did I saving a life can save your own, or if you an overcome fear can turn into your greatest strength. But I like the possession thing. I thought that was the way to go.
There you go.
Yeah.
I had backups.
Tomorrow, dog tales. Stories, that is.
Dog tales.
Bad dogs.
Oh,
we had good dogs tonight.
Bad dog.
These are bad dogs. Bad dog. The barking death of suspense. And Mr. Keen. Oh, we haven't had Mr. Keen in a while. This will be the case of the leaping dog. Yeah.
Yep. Leaping dogs are not good dogs. They just jump all over you.
Yes.
Dave and I had a discussion earlier in the week about more dog radio. We're coming up with all kinds of stuff.
We were.
We can do that.
There's
of
a green...
I thank you for tonight's programming, Dave, kind of celebrating the new pup in
Oh, without harming the dog, will the dog bark on command?
No.
So
no, hey,
he's
dog,
only
come here, bark. No.
He's only 10 weeks old. He doesn't do a whole lot on command. You gotta kinda just get his attention with
you didn't give the puppy's name. Give the puppy's name.
His name is Paladin.
Doorknob. Paladin. Yeah. Oh, okay.
Paladin.
Doorknob.
Well,
Doorknob.
Doorknob 2.
Doorknob version 2. Yeah.
Two reasons
his name is
Paladin.
One is Paladin
after Lassie's.
Yes. But he answers to the doorbell. Yes, he does.
And Doorknob.
Two reasons he's named Paladin. One is after the actor who played Lassie, that dog's name was Pal, and he's a noble creature like a paladin. So there. And he looks a little bit like John Daner. So.
Here you go.
I don't know.
With or without the color. Wasn't
Paladin Richard Boone?
On TV.
Yeah, on radio. We're
doing radio
John
here.
Daner.
That's
right.
Never mind. See you tomorrow, and then right after our show at 8, it's Horrible Horse Star and Guy of the Ghoul. Wrong outro. Sorry, kid. Good night.
Come on.
Get off my shin. Oh, sorry.
Hello.
He gags.
Fortunately, that wasn't the live section.
Yes.
Fortunately.
Get off my shin. Wait, is your dog on your shin? Is your dog romancing your leg? What's going on there?
No.
Oh, okay. How's Joe doing? Is he gone upstairs yet?
Joe is a wuss. He looks longingly up the stairs like he wants to go upstairs. You know, but no, he's a wuss. I think, though, I see him scheming. He's kind of getting a sense of the puppy's sleep schedule because the puppy sleeps quite a bit. You know, he's like totally wound for an hour, and then he zonks for like a couple hours. If he's getting too rowdy, you just give him food coma.
There you go.
That's all you got to do, or wear him out. You know, take him for a. I've got a pretty big yard, so I can take him for a long walk without leaving the property.
Are you having any interactions whatsoever between the cat and the dog?
None. Cat is total wuss. No, but I think what he's trying to do is figure out when the puppy's sleeping so he can sneak around at least. And I have a feeling it'll take time, but the cat will eventually learn to deal.
Is your home on several different levels? Like you've got a two- or three-story home, and the dog's on one level and the cat's on another?
Yeah, it's a colonial, so like bedrooms are upstairs. The dog is on the main floor, and then the cat rules here in the. So he's a cellar dweller with me.
He's a cellar, your cellar cat. Oh,
cellar dweller, yes, he's a cellar dweller.
Cellar dweller cat.
Well, and I mean that's where his litter box is down here. The food is down here. So what does he got to go for?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
He's having his own COVID lockdown.
I had to do this with my first dog, and I had a cat. I had an Egyptian tabby, which is a beautiful
Ooh,
cat.
Yeah, they're interesting.
Yeah. But the cat was neurotic and eventually was like, okay, I got to go. No, absolutely nut birds. Like, I will rip your face off. Freak out.
Once in a while, you get a cat. Like, my gray one that I lost last year, she was just full of hate. I don't get it. She was never mistreated by any human nor any other animal.
No.
But she was just full of hate, and I was the only one she could tolerate, and she died young.
I wish I knew more. I named him Basho after a Japanese poet or philosopher, I forget. But anyway, this cat was found at an apartment complex. I was working there as a maintenance tech. And my boss says, hey, there's a cat. Somebody left a cat. And I was like, what? They left a cat. Why would anyone leave an animal? And I don't care if it's a cat or not. It's an animal, so you bring it in. You know? So I brought it in. I think I got a special dispensation from the apartment people because I worked with them, and I brought in their cat, whatever. And the cat would come out of the apartment, and I'd go, hey, and it would go back in. So it would listen to commands, but for the most part, it'd just stare at you and go, you know, and it was like,
the cat
the hell,
did that
cat?
Or the dog?
The cat.
That was a crazy cat noise you made there.
That was this cat was like nuts. Tasmanian devil cat.
Yeah, I've had cats that growl before,
And,
I had one that growled when she ate. She would growl when she was eating.
Eventually, I'll get to the point, Dale. And the point is, when I finally did get the dog, we had the cat pan, and the dog was like, "Oh, look, kitty brownies. Let's go eat." And it was like, "No, I'm not going to do that." So I built a wooden cage. Around cat box, so the cat could get in, but the dog could not. It was kind of like, no dog, no, you're not going to do that. That's nasty. Kitty brownies, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You might want to consider, you know, because that dog's going to start rambling all over the house, and eventually it's going to go, ooh, kitty brownies,
You know what somebody did? I can't believe they did it at work yet. They had a cake baking contest, and somebody made a big, they made like a crumbly frosting on it. You know, like, do you ever see that where it's like got breadcrumbs on top?
Yeah.
But they were all dyed blue.
Uh-huh.
Okay, like an aqua blue, and then they put Tootsie Rolls in it.
Uh-huh.
and it looked like a cat box.
but the
cake was actually good.
It's gross.
But it was a gross idea.
I myself personally would have stayed away from such a confection. I would have gone, no, you guys are nuts. No, thanks. I'm not trying it. Nope, I'm not going to be part of your experiment.
Oh, I liked it.
How about you, Dave? Do you delve into experiments?
I some chocolates I get into, but, you know, if you see a Baby Ruth floating in a pool, then, you know, you always got to
wonder.
I'm leaving it alone.
Then you send Bill Murray in.
Dave, the one thing out of this entire program that's bothered me, and I have to ask you the question, have you ever had a goldfish named Doorknob?
I have not. I had one named Gerald. Okay. It was the goldfish. It was a catfish.
Gerald.
named Gerald, yeah.
A catfish named Gerald. Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, we
torture
the boy.
Bubbles is a guy.
Well, every once in a while, we'll torture the boy with memories of Doorknob.
Doorknob. So to me, it would make sense. You would possibly finding is better than buying, but definitely get a brass Doorknob and put it in the tank with Doorknob. So Doorknob has a Doorknob.
Yeah, there you go.
You know. I'm just Doorknob. That's amazing. That's wonderful. That's better than any story.
So my best cat, I don't know, I'm sure I've talked about him before, but he was amazing. He was part Maine Coon, a big, gentle giant, loved everybody, dogs, anything, everybody. And that cat actually did have a job. He felt that he was the official greeter. He would greet people at the door. When anybody came to the door, it's like, hi. I'm big and furry, and I don't care.
And he was friendly towards anyone.
Yeah, anyone or anything.
I'm guessing.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
He was a very the most chill cat I have ever seen in my life. I've never saw a more mellow cat that was breathing.
Way back when, I had a cat that would watch me shave. I would get back when I was shaving. No,
he was waiting for an opportunity to.
No, he was. We had a sink, and he would put his paws up on the sink and just stand there on his back legs and then just watch me shave.
Thinking to himself, you know, if I time a jump just right.
What could he get? What? That he could get shaved too? What? What would he get?
Maybe no, like if it's that, time, you know, the razor's at your neck if he jumps at you, you know.
Oh no, he was chill like your door greeting cat. He was just okay. This cat's siblings, one of his first siblings, were two ferrets, weasels, you know. And he would sit there and race around the apartment. He would chase them. They would chase him. It was just this big party of these three animals, one cat, two ferrets, male, female ferrets. And they would run around the house, and they would just and they would sleep in a big mass together. It was a trip. And then later he had kitty cat siblings, but just the most chill kitty cat ever. But he would watch me shave, and I was like, how many cats watch you shave? I mean, you know.
That's true.
Yeah, it was just, I have a photograph of that. Maybe I'll find it and I'll send it to you. It's weird.
Dave,
he's just sitting there.
Dave?
I've never had a cat watching me shave. Maybe my dog, but not my cat.
Have your pets
ever watched?
Is that
a dog watch you shave?
Have your pets ever
watched
TV?
You know what? I had one extra feature on one of my movies about the Squeak the Squirrel, and we had a cat that went nuts trying to get that squirrel that was on our TV.
Oh my God, that's great!
Oh, okay, yeah, there you go.
were you able to capture that for the show?
No, I wasn't. But I didn't even think about it.
Yeah,
but it was.
I should have filmed it when that mean little gray cat was born. She was so cute. And we actually got to see her being born. And her mom popped the little amniotic sac. But while for a minute there, she was in that globe. And I would have just loved to zoom in on that and do like a 2001 A Space Odyssey spoof with the little kitty.
Oh, that's weird.
Floating there. That would have.
Yeah.
That's exactly what was just crossing my mind where she was being born. I should have filmed this.
A little background music and you're set.
And everybody was yelling at me when I brought it up that I'm just exploiting her. And I'm like, well, yeah, she's a cat.
Yeah, if you could make money on your pets, go, right?
Well, at that chill cat, when he was a little kitty, that's the one. Mm-hmm. I think I guess told you guys he was on American Greetings calendars and greeting cards. We got mm-hmm. like $40 for them to shoot him, you know, with a Bichon puppy and another one by himself. In a Valentine's setting. So
nice.
He was Mr. February. Oh.
Mr. February.
And he made you $40.
He made us $40. Hey, in the '80s that was a bit of money. That was a little bit of money.
Yeah, that was let me do the calculator, comes up to about $968. Yeah, that's great.
No, stop it, it's not that much. But it was a little
bit. I'm sorry. I calculated if the cat was made out of wood. Then today, never mind.
No.
The price of wood is high. There's a joke in there. Okay.
I have forgotten that wood is so expensive, so I did not recognize that as a joke until you explained it to me, and now I feel stupid. Be that boat. Down, boy. Down.
There was a crazy thing. I made mention of it where a long time ago they would have wrestling matches. You know, they get these wrestlers out there to beat each other crazy or whatever, and the loser would have to eat dog food. Now, a weird thing about dog food, and I don't know if you guys are all that in tuned with canned dog food.
Nope.
No, dry food only, that's it?
Yeah, my critters generally eat dry food. Maybe, so, you know, a little gravy on there, a little water on there, but...
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. But if you were to get one of these things, like kennel ration in a can or something like that, and you open it up...
Right.
How is it that this animal, that its strongest sense is smell, will eat this thing that makes us almost have a gag reflex? By smelling dog food, you go, whoa, you know. It just...
Obviously, though, you know, dogs eat some pretty amazing, disgusting things.
Like kitty brownies, yeah, so.
Exactly.
Yes, they do.
So, I'm guessing maybe their palate's a little bit different than ours.
It is a big insult when you call someone or something a brownie-eating dog, I believe would be a way of saying.
If they caught the reference,
yes,
and they knew about the price of wood,
yes. I had to be sadly reminded. Fortunately, I'm not.
It's late. It's late. You know. Hey, we get it. Blah blah.
So I did porch rails this year. Thank God I bought the wood last year. Jesus.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I've got a collection of wood here. It's probably worth $9 billion. I've got to sell it on eBay or something. Another thing, I was telling you that I actually did modify a Wikipedia entry about Lassie because of this. Never would have known. But somebody put some erroneous thing on there about cartoons, and it's like, ooh, cartoons? My ears went, and I was like, ooh, let me look. And it was wrong. And I was like, oh, I have to correct this. Or I will die a slow and quiet death.
Don't
anyway.
It's messy. I think that would be impossible.
That would be impossible. Yeah. You'll probably have coffee after you die.
No, I have something rigged inside my body. So when I do expire, I will immediately blow up. Just boom. You know, I'm taking everything with me.
I would like to have a robotic skeleton just creep people out walking around, have them thinking.
Oh yeah. Oh, there you go. Yeah. As soon as you fade out, the robot takes over.
Yeah. You know, as soon as it rots off, it'll be kind of like Terminator. Left inside. Soulless thing like that I am.
One of the worst jokes I have is, do zombies eat popcorn with their fingers? And the answer is no. They eat their fingers separate. Ew.
Yes.
Blah.
I don't know. I just, butterfingers are good. So.
Don't lay
a finger on my butterfinger.
Especially if they're zombie butterfingers.
Thank you, Bart.
Hey, do you remember when I was hooked on Walking Dead, speaking of zombies?
Yes.
Hooked on?
Boy, did I lose my interest fast after like this ninth season or eighth season. I really liked it, and it's like, I think when they got rid of Rick, it went to hell.
Rick, yes.
You know?
Yeah. Well, I keep waiting for Rick to return because they never showed a body.
Well, no, he was in that helicopter with the garbage lady.
Where did they go? We don't know.
There was supposed to be follow-up actual movies, like cinema movies, with Andrew Lincoln playing Rick in like full-length AMC-funded feature films.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Or maybe they're movie length on AMC. I don't know. Maybe it's not for the theaters, but whatever. And that never came to pass.
Yeah,
I mean,
they still
had some interesting characters, but the whole thing, I don't know. I just started losing interest.
No, I lost it too. But it's still on TV right now. I think it might be its last season this year or something. I don't know. But
Could be. I think it ran its course. I mean, they had a good run.
You like zombies, shows, right, Dave?
No, I don't end it. I understand.
I was joking.
Vampires. I really don't understand zombies. I don't get into zombies. I just don't really understand zombies. So.
I think our zombies were slow.
I think the
but now they're fast.
They're in some movies, yeah. I think the interest in zombies has kind of morphed over the years. Like at first it was sheer terror when you had Night of the Living Dead, which weren't even really called zombies.
No.
And then you had a little burst of those films in the 70s with some zombies coming back that were pretty morbid. And I think it became like... Like with Walking Dead, it became kind of fun. How many different ways can you slaughter these things and make it graphic, you know?
The funniest thing was the Plan Z or something, or Project Z or something. It was something on the Sci-Fi Network.
World War Z.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. There are two cinematic things that I've seen in my life that just make me bust out laughing. One was... Tom Cruise rendition of War of the Worlds.
Tom Hanks does zombies.
Yeah, the Tom Cruise War of the Worlds. Out of nowhere, these people are walking, trying to get away from the aliens, and this full speed train comes zooming down the tracks. And it's completely on fire. Okay, that made me bust out. I was like, okay, that's crazy. It's kind of crazy, like the stampede of cows in the Stephen King thing where they're on fire.
Oh, no, you're thinking of Mars Attacks. That was Mars Attacks.
Okay. And then...
At the beginning,
Okay, and then in World War Z, there's all these zombies, and they formed a ball, B-A-L-L, ball, and they're... Just continually rolling, this big huge ball
building
of zombies,
like a snowball,
yeah. And if they run over more zombies, it just adds to it and gets bigger and bigger. And
That's funny.
And throughout throughout episodes. It would go like, you would go seven episodes, and then, oh, there's a zombie ball. Here it comes, and there it goes. Okay. And then, and it would just keep going. Jeez. And you would just see the zombie ball. It was one ball, and it just, and no matter where they went, oh, here's a, stop, wait, you know, train passing, nope, zombie ball, you know, and it would just,
yeah.
To the left, to the right, zombie ball.
Yeah, and some people don't get it. You've got the, what, that one show, iZombie or something, where the mother is.
Yeah,
cool.
Yeah, that was kind of.
Yeah.
Interest, but then I lost interest.
And then the overkill, one good thing about the overkill is you get some good comedies like Shaun of the Dead. Like
I have to watch that.
Like Zombieland. And now what's that new one now? I watched it, oh, God, several months ago with my son. The one with the kid who played young Darth Vader. And
he was in
and,
a zombie
Bill
movie?
Murray's in it, too. Yeah.
Oh, Bill Murray. Oh. Damn it.
Yeah.
Sorry. I can't think of the name. Look it up. Bill Murray.
It was a fun title, and I can't remember what it was, but that one was pretty fun.
I'm amazed how much Bill Murray lends his talent to so many odd things.
Yes.
He was on, like, one of the last episodes of Letterman, Bill Murray, and it was hilarious.
Yeah. Letterman
used
to be
fun. Last. I have recently been watching old Letterman, NBC Letterman, and wow, just wow. I wouldn't mind returning to that world again. We're not in that world anymore. We're apocalypse number 7. I don't know where we're at on the charts anymore. Apocalypse 6, apocalypse something, you know, 3, 7, 9. I forget where we are.
I don't know. How
wear a mask. Don't wear
Egypt?
A mask.
I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. What, put rubber gloves on your feet. I'm not sure where we're at anymore, you know.
Me neither.
But as long as Dave doesn't start hearing bells, I think that we're going to be, you know, just fine. You know. You okay over there, Dave?
I'm fine.
Yeah?
Are you sure? Not starting to zombies.
The
only zombie thing I ever truly enjoyed was that one episode of Night Stalker, where
where he had to sew his mouth up and put salt in his mouth and all that stuff.
Yeah, salt in his mouth, and then the zombie opened his eyes. Yeah.
Yeah, that was the Haiti. It was the zombie from Haiti where they do weird stuff. Yeah, that's a little bit different. Oh, and that takes us to Mantan Marlin, King of the Zombies. Oh, that's
oh,
King of
Zombies. Funny movie. Funny movie.
He was so funny in that.
He was brilliant.
He was.
That interaction with the maid in the basement was the best, I think, of him in that film.
It was really interesting. I that's why I was sharing with you guys that I found out today about it was Shemp Howard that actually suggested if anything happens to anybody that Mantan Moreland would make a great stooge because he's so good with a physical comedy anyway. It was the studio that was against it. They already had other people on studio contract. They didn't want to pay anybody else.
Yep.
Not that they were overpaying the stooges because they weren't.
No, they weren't. But it would have been interesting to see Mantan Moreland with those guys.
I think that would have been fabulous.
His humor strikes me as he is at his best when he has someone to play off of.
Oh, yes.
But he had some type of dialogue with another comedian where they would finish each other's sentences.
Oh,
it was an old vaudeville routine that he did. And he did that twice. He ran into that guy in a couple of Charlie Chan movies when he was when he was Charlie Chan's chauffeur. And I got to air one of those because one of those is in public domain. Dark Alibi, I think it is. No. The Charlie Chan Secret, I think it is.
And there's another one he did. I think it was called Haunted House. And it was about it is what it is. It was an all black film. And there was some type of gambling going on in this one house. And
oh, Lucky,
it, there was a ghost.
What's that called? The Lucky something or other.
Lucky
that,
Ghost?
That's what Mantan Moreland, right?
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Dave helped
and,
me
and,
on this.
And he was
we
in
hit,
there.
We,
and
I haven't seen that one, but I've heard about it, yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
He was a headliner on the black films, and he also did pretty good on the white films as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He, what the heck was the name of that? The Lucky Club, maybe? It, like, starts out in a nightclub, but it turns into, like, a ghost haunted house story or something.
Yep. I'm looking it up right now.
And I used to play that on Erie House TV to fill in the afternoons. I thought that was a fun
one. That's the
Lucky Ghost.
Lucky Ghost.
What was that? Oh, okay.
Lucky Ghost.
Yeah. What year you got on that? Lucky Ghost.
I don't know, but it's hard to find a good copy.
1942.
It's a hard to find a good copy of that one.
Well, he started in 33 with his first film in 33. So, yeah, 40, there it is. Yeah.
Well, he does vaudeville before that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
he was in Tarzan's New Adventure. Oh, my gosh. Wow. Okay. That's wild.
Mm.
There you go. A Haunting We Will Go. He did a whole bunch of great stuff. Oh, my gosh.
Yep.
Just
yep.
And he was in the Cowboys Hall of Fame in the United States, believe
yes.
it or not.
I read that. Was he like a rodeo clown or something?
I think he was a full-fledged cowboy, from what I understood. But
maybe.
You would think he would be a comedian, but he was actually apparently he could rope a steer or something. I don't know.
Why not? Well, gentlemen, I hate to do this, but I think I'm going to need to let Puppy out for his evening.
Okay.
Yard decoration.
He's constitutional.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right.
To take a constitutional.
Well, in that case, Gar, you have a great show tomorrow, and
thank you.
Time to try to bring in the one and only James Durante to close us out for the night.
And thank you all.
Good night.
What's that, brother?
I said thank you all for having me. Great fun.
Thank you for being here.
It was nice having
you. Love you, brother. Break
Yay!
A leg tomorrow.
We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Sorry for what we say, and he could take a do.
Good night, folks, and good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
Guys,
good night.
Good night.